Show. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! A minute past the hour, and I got a feeling we're going to be busy this evening. It's Friday on the Front Porch on the Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is what we like to call conversation radio. Radio unlike any other. Participatory and entirely supported by you, the Horn Family Commune. Now, we ended the program last night discussing what little information there was about the massive spill of poison into the water supply of about 300,000 human beings in West Virginia. We will get to more details in the course of conversation. In particular, I have asked a person for whom I have a great deal of respect, a man by the name of Ed Rabel, who you may recall, if you are of a certain age, as an Emmy Award-winning journalist with CBS back in the day. More importantly, however, Ed is now a candidate for the 2nd District seat in the Congress of the United States, being vacated by Shelley Moore Capito because of her overarching ambition to run for the Senate seat, being vacated by Senator John D. Rockefeller IV, otherwise known as Jay. Ed Rabel is running as a Mountain Party candidate. That means he is more than likely to be much more in line with the thinking of the Horn family and of progressives and otherwise decent human beings out there all over the place. I do believe I have Ed on the line. Let's bring him along.
Bob, how are you? This is Ed Rabel, and by the way, I'm running as an independent, and I welcome the support of the Mountain Party.
I apologize for that, Ed, but I guess I just sort of naturally associated you, but independent it shall be, and that doesn't change the fact that were I in the 2nd District, I would be a committed voter for you.
Oh, thank you so much. I really appreciate that. We've had a bad event here in our region, and it's not just Charleston, but also surrounding counties, about 9 counties, and as you said, about 300,000 people have been affected. And so this is something that we really obviously deplore, and we don't know where it's going to end, Bob.
No, we don't. The list of what we don't know, Ed, is far more extensive than that list of what we do know. Among other things, we don't know much about the chemical except for the fact that it can make you awfully, awfully sick. We don't even know how long people, and this is probably the most horrifying part of it all, we don't know how long people were consuming poisoned water before the warnings went out, do we?
Well, that's exactly right, and here's what happened. You know, this privately held company called Freedom Industries, which operates the chemical storage tanks and production facilities right along the Elk River that flows into the Kanawha River, they didn't even let the government know that there had been a spill, that thousands and thousands of gallons of this chemical called MCHM, hard for me to pronounce, it's called methacyclohexane methanol.
Very good. Better than I can do.
Yeah, it's a compound that's used to wash coal of impurities, and obviously it poses significant dangers to humans when they're in close contact with this. And what happened is this chemical started leaking out yesterday and was leaking for a long time into the water supply. And it wasn't the company that alerted the government, but people who began smelling the odor of this stuff, which smells kind of like licorice, and they are the ones who alerted the government. So all the way from the beginning, it appears that there's been a dereliction of duty and responsibility by this company.
Well, it certainly does look that way, but the problems extend far beyond the company, do they not, Ed? There are issues related to, for instance, the West Virginia Department of Environmental Protection, who later said, or said sometime during the day, that no, none of their air monitors, and they have air monitors, the WVDEP does, because the Kanawha Valley is chock-a-block with lots of chemical plants that could kill you in lots of different ways, but none of their air monitors would have found this stuff.
Yeah, and, you know, one of the problems here is this, that most of the coverage down here of what has been going on has been focused on whether the first response broke down, whether the alerts weren't clear. But, you know, they're focusing, the media are focusing on the wrong thing. What happens is when they focus on that, basically the people who are trying to get away from their responsibilities in terms of what happened, they try to shift that over to government responsibility as opposed to the responsibility of the very company that allowed this leak to happen. So that's where we, you know, are in trouble here. Not only has this company apparently violated all kinds of safety measures, but it also is trying to shift blame over to the government and to outfits like the Department of Environmental Protection. And I'll tell you this, if I'm elected, I promise, as my first official act as congressman from the 2nd Congressional District, I'm going to seek a full congressional investigation of the effect of coal production on local water supplies nationwide. And we can't have this anymore in West Virginia. This is basically, they're turning it into an industrial zone, and that's unfortunate.
And the fact of the matter is, if one is conversant at all, Ed, with the nature of West Virginia's history, one understands that this has been a sacrifice zone for in excess of 100 years. I tallied up the numbers, and I came up with something like 100,000 unnecessary deaths in the last 100 years or so, once you combine all the mine explosions, all the routine accidents, the black lung, the people who die in mountaintop removal communities simply because they live near mountaintop removal. We've just been sort of casually sacrificed for a dollar for more than a century now. And I wonder, is this the wake up call people have needed? And if it is, Ed, how does it differ from 1972's Buffalo Creek disaster?
Well, obviously, the Buffalo Creek disaster took hundreds of lives, and in that sense, this is not, so far as we know, and we're still in the early stages of this environmental disaster, but it says to us that we just are rather casual about the lives of people in our region. How is it that you can allow an outfit to locate along a main tributary, a main stream, a main river, and put their tanks in there, and then be subject to pollution like this? How can we allow that to continue without some sort of reflection on where we're going, what we're doing? You know, Bob, when Democratic and Republican politicians in West Virginia talk about coal, they talk about the industry. You know, when Shelley Moore Capito says that coal means jobs and that there's a war on coal, what she's talking about is the industry. So we need to talk about the miners and their families and their communities. And above all, we need to do as Senator Byrd did back in 2009 when he said the time has come to have an open and honest dialogue about coal's future in West Virginia. So he said, let's speak the truth. And so let's speak a little truth here. Let me, if you'll indulge me just a minute.
Absolutely.
I'll tell you this. It's at least naive and at worst deceitful to suggest that if the EPA would go away, coal would boom again and so would jobs. Almost all of the job losses in the coal industry are attributable to mechanization, increasing costs of extraction, widespread rejection of new coal-fired power plants by communities all over America, and by competition from low-priced natural gas and cheap Western coal. And then there's this. Coal is no longer the engine that drives West Virginia's economy. Today, it provides less than 6% of incomes and less than 3% of jobs. What's more, the scourge of black lung disease is back, and it's afflicting miners at higher rates than it did in the 1970s. And meanwhile, coal companies are still trying to evade responsibility. Now think about it. As the Patriot Coal episode showed, if we don't help miners fight for their pensions, the companies will even try to take those away. So the industry costs the state more in expenses than it contributes in taxes. So in short, by granting tax favors to the coal industry and squandering vast amounts of political capital railing against the EPA and passing protectionist legislation, Democratic and Republican leaders are mortgaging West Virginia's economic and environmental future in pursuit of a myth and ignoring the pressing need to plan for a post-coal economy. So I'll get off my...
Well, that's okay. I just have one question. Are you sure I can't convince you to run for Senate so I get to vote for you?
You're very kind.
Well, I say that seriously because it's become a very frustrating event for me to go to the polls anymore, Ed, because I go in and I wind up leaving more ballot positions blank than I cast votes.
Right.
Because there's no one that I see a trip to the polling place as a civic obligation, but fraught with moral duty. And under those circumstances, I get left in a real pickle sometimes. Let me back up with you for just a moment, if I may, please, and ask you a couple of things. One, you mentioned the fact that people are hollering that somehow there was a failure of regulation in this. Aren't the same people who are squealing that, Ed, the same people who have said that regulations kill jobs? Do they want to have their cake and eat it too?
Yeah, they can't have it both ways. I mean, let's face it, what they want is deregulation. What they want is to do away with the EPA. What they want is to once again go back to, a freewheeling time when people died in the mines and died in spills like this, died at Buffalo Creek. What they want are what they think were the good old days. And at the same time, when something like this happens, somehow it's the government's fault that it didn't carry out its responsibilities in regulation. Well, it's illogical. That's irrational, isn't it?
It certainly is. And among the things that we have learned, according to Ken Ward Jr., who has done some really, really good work on the fly for the Charleston Gazette, we learned that the West Virginia Department of Environmental Protection has never even set foot on the property of the Orwellianly named Freedom Industries because Freedom Industries required no permit from the West Virginia Department of Environmental Protection. How in the world does something... You've got... this place sits a mile and a half upstream from the intake for 300... for clean drinking water for 300,000 people, and there's no requirement that they be inspected? There's no permitting requirement? How does something like that happen, Ed?
I don't know. They have these huge tanks containing harmful chemicals. They're built on the very edge of the waterways that we depend on for drinking water, taking baths and putting out fires. And what has brought us to this point where a hole in the bottom of a chemical tank, undetected due to dereliction by a company cleaning coal, can shut down our major population centers, close our schools, terrify our residents, and threaten to send people to the hospital. I mean, what on earth are we thinking? What are we doing here? Especially, when we have pledged to the people of West Virginia that we will protect them and their lives, and then something like this happens, and once again we see that there are huge problems, not only within the private sector, but within government as well.
Well, one of the things that I think needs to be drawn out as well, Ed, is the fact that this substance was used to wash coal. That means that it was trucked, I presume, from these sites to coal preparation plants all over probably southern West Virginia. I don't know if there's another company selling this stuff in northern West Virginia, but it was trucked all over southern West Virginia to coal preparation plants, and that means that this toxic stuff has been used in proximity to homes and communities, God only knows where. But the process doesn't even stop there, because anybody who takes a good look at, say, Google Earth and zooms in on southern West Virginia will notice that we've got a lot of lakes in southern West Virginia, or what appear to be lakes, but they're actually multi-billion gallon toxic waste dumps of the waste water liquid refuse toxins from those coal cleaning processes and the water that comes off of mountaintop removal sites and generally. So this isn't, can you speak to the fact or can you speak to the process whereby so many West Virginians are kept in the dark until something disastrous like this takes place?
Well, there's almost like putting blinders on. You know, there's this whole business about why we should revere this patrimony. Now, we should worry about our patrimony. After all, these outside coal companies have been coming in here to West Virginia and stealing our patrimony for years. They do pay severance tax, but it certainly is not enough. And it certainly is not going to make up for all the deaths, all of the people who have been hurt, all of the coal miners with the black lung disease. You know, back in 1948, Bob, 126,000 miners were employed in the coal mining industry. This was long before the Environmental Protection Agency was ever even invented. Since that time, there's been a decline in the number of coal miners required to mine the coal. In 1980, there were 100,000. Since that time, even more decline. And now, that was before the Clean Air Act was even enacted. And now today, there are fewer than 25,000 coal miners, and that's largely because what we do now is lop off the tops of mountains. It's easier to get at the coal. Mechanization, really, and modernization of the coal mining has caused that. So it's not, is it really worth our while to perpetuate this industry when we know what it does to us? We know what has happened, and we know that Walmart is the biggest private employer in the state of West Virginia, not coal. Walmart is the biggest private employer, so we can do better than that. And the people of West Virginia, I think, subconsciously understand this. And now I think this is a wake up call. How many more wake up calls do we need?
I don't know the answer to that, Ed. And I hope my own pessimism proves to be quite wrong on the subject. What can be done from a congressional standpoint to bring some sort of relief to people who are poisoned and sickened and killed for profit in this state?
Well, all kinds of things can be done. You know, the federal government is launching a criminal investigation into what has happened in the Kanawha Valley. So that is one thing that is underway. President Obama has ordered that there be relief brought to our state, even though there's almost palpable hatred of the president in this, certainly in the southern coal fields, because people have been misled about this so-called war on coal. And you know, the thing that is really rather unfortunate is that so many politicians here pander to the hatred, pander to those who would who are saying that there's a war on coal and that Obama is responsible for it, when in fact in this state the federal government provides about 27% of the personal income that that people receive here. That's more than in the any other state in the union. And I think that obviously people discount how important the federal government has been in their lives in terms of disability, in terms of you know, benefits from the black and black lung disease, in terms of food stamps, in terms of veterans benefits, in terms of Social Security. All of these things come as a result of action by the federal government. So obviously we always turn to the federal government in times of stress and times of what's happening to us right now. So there's a kind of psychosis that goes on here, Bob, when you have folks who on the one hand attack and blast the federal government and at the same time receive so many benefits from the government.
Let me ask you this. You and I have talked, we've corresponded back and forth about the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Act,
right,
presently in Congress as H.R. 526. It provides, among other things, I think it's kind of a beacon insofar as it says that what's important is the health and well-being of the citizenry, and that informed citizens deserve to know what it is that's being used around them and whether or not it causes cancer, birth defects, heart disease, and it mandates a fully funded federal study. Is that the kind of thing that this state is in need of, perhaps even where chemicals like this mouthful that got dumped into the water are concerned? Do people deserve to know what is in their world around them?
Well, of course they do, and you know, it's not in the interest of those who make a lot of money from the industry to inform the people and to educate them. We need to do more educating, obviously, and the very kind of thing that you're suggesting here with regard to that act is the kind of thing that we need to inform the people about so they can make good choices on their own about what the future might hold for them.
Do you have any idea, have you heard anything and anybody you're talking to, what the economic impact of this is going to be? We've talked about the relatively small amount of economic impact that the coal industry now has in West Virginia. But when you consider that everybody who has a health permit from, say, the Kanawha County Health Department to serve food, serve beverages, take care of children, hospitals, schools, universities, every one of these things is shut down right now.
That's right.
What's it like in Charleston right now? I mean, I'm up on the mountain in Fayette County. I don't know.
Well, it's awful. I went there today. I live in Lincoln County, which is one of the counties that is affected by this. All the schools are shut down. All of the businesses, all the grocery stores, all of the restaurants are all shut down. The same thing in Charleston. People are there have been tales of people fighting over trying to get bottled water. People have had to go to water provisioning stations in order to get water to drink. They can't take showers, they can't bathe, they can't use the odor is horrendous. I was there in South Charleston today. And it burns your eyes. It affects your breathing.
You can still notice it. It's still present.
Yeah, absolutely. I was surprised. I thought it would have dissipated by this time, but it hasn't.
That's amazing.
There are lots of lawsuits that are coming, by the way. I mean, those people who have lost income as a result of this, they're going to be filing lawsuits. And there's no telling where this is going to end. And unfortunately, one of the problems is officials are unclear when it's going to be over. Apparently, it's going to take literally months to clean out pipes through which this chemical ran and fouled the pipes, the systems, and it's going to take an awful long time to get. So nobody really knows exactly when this disaster is going to come to an end, and that's left people high and dry. They don't know when they can go back to work. They don't know when they're going to open schools again. They don't know any of this, and that's really frustrating, obviously.
Do you have any comments, Ed, on the quality of leadership that has been forthcoming from West Virginia's political elite on this on this issue?
My concern is this, that both the Democratic Party and the Republican Party, you know, I have railed obviously in the past about how we need to return to our roots, to the days of JFK and the days of LBJ and the days of when the Democratic Party really stood for with the people and for the people. I remember when Jack Kennedy, for example, stood on the State House steps in Charleston, West Virginia, on the 100th birthday, and it was pouring rain, and there were thousands and thousands of people there to listen to him speak, because they loved him. After all, in West Virginia, they voted for Jack Kennedy in that primary election against Hubert Humphrey back in 1960. I know that's a long time ago for people, and they don't remember this, but he won. Jack Kennedy won in the state of West Virginia in that primary, and that propelled him into the national limelight as a candidate who could win despite the fact that he was a Catholic, winning here in this rather fundamentalist state of West Virginia. So he was there on the 100th anniversary, and the rain was coming down, and the people were there applauding him, and his opening line was, "The sun does not always shine in West Virginia, but the people always do." And they loved him for that. And now where are we? We are at a time when a Democratic president, Barack Obama, is there, and the people hate him. We're here at a time when chemical companies can foul our streams, and a lot of people aren't even up in arms. Formerly, Democratic politicians, politicians of the Democratic Party, would have been doing something, would have been railing against this. I don't hear that. And what I hear, though, is the same old song from both Democrats and Republicans. The Democratic Party, I call these folks in the hierarchy, not good Democrats on the ground, but in the hierarchy, crypto-Republicans, because they have basically morphed into the Republican Party. So it's a singular party, and the things I am saying are the things that the people in the Democratic Party ought to be saying today, but they aren't. The state has gone more red than ever before. It's like a red state. And the conservatism is appalling in terms of not serving the people, but serving the industry. You know, that's what I said before, that when the Shelley Moore Capitos of the world talk about coal, that what they're really talking about is sustaining the coal industry and not helping the miners and the people and the communities. That's where we are.
Well, you know, of course, Shelley Moore Capito, with no sense of irony whatsoever, was Facebooking about job-killing regulations at the same time that the poison was being released into the river. I trust you know that, don't you?
I do know that. Yes, indeed.
And, of course, the other thing that I also pointed this out, the West Virginia Coal Association today tweeted, "If it's good enough to wash coal, it's good enough to wash me."
Did they really do that? I didn't see that tweet.
Yeah, they really did. With a smiley face.
Oh no.
For someone like me who has followed this for a number of years, Ed, this is par for the course. I remember when the birth defects study was released and the National Mining Association responded with a press release saying that the study was invalid because hillbillies can't help committing incest.
Oh, I remember that. I saw it.
There's a level of I think we're being taken for granted, Ed. Because the disdain that these industries have and their political purchases have for the well-being of workaday West Virginians is almost inexpressible. That's why I found it dissonant, I guess, when I saw that Earl Ray Tomlin, the governor of this state, when I saw that his signature statement on this disaster, and it is a disaster, was to say that it was unacceptable for this to have happened. I certainly hope the CEO of Freedom Industries knows it's unacceptable.
Well, it's a travesty and it's a shame. You know, Bob, people are fed up, though, I think, with what they see going on in our state and also in Washington. I do believe, and that's one of the things, reasons I have hope, that there are, for example, last year, voter turnout in West Virginia was the worst in the nation. Less than 50% of the people turned out to vote. Among young people, less than 23% of the people turned out. And I think that there are an awful lot of people who are frustrated, just as you're so well tonight are saying and exhibiting. I think they're frustrated, and they want something new, and that's what I'm trying to offer them. And I'm not being arrogant in this, but you know, they're frustrated with Washington's inability to function, and by the consequences of that failure right here in West Virginia, few jobs, low pay, not a lot of reason to think it's going to get any better anytime soon. They're also exhausted by the perpetual party warfare that seems to be not so much about what's good for America as it is about gaining political advantage at any price, and that's why folks are looking for new and independent voices, I think, unburdened by the baggage of party politics and willing to work with others toward the solutions. And so, here in West Virginia, those issues are magnified, and I can go on and on, obviously, but we're trying to do something about it.
And I applaud you for it. I've been following you on Facebook for quite some time, and you always have things to say that resonate very strongly with me. It would be unfair, I think, if I did not make mention of the fact that political campaigns are not run on good intentions. They do require money. Do you have a site set up where people can help you out if they wish to?
Well, I do. Yeah, thanks, Bob, for mentioning that. I really appreciate it. My website is under construction right now, but I am listed under Facebook, Ed Rabel for Congress. You can go there and you can contribute by using PayPal, or you can send me a check at Ed Rabel for Congress at Post Office Box 11574 in Charleston, West Virginia. I think it's 23. I'll have to look it up here.
25301?
No, 25339.
Okay. Different post office.
Yeah.
I remember when it was just 25301. That tells you how long I've been gone out of Charleston. let me also point out to people that you have a book out there of your experiences prior to becoming a political candidate in West Virginia. Could you tell people a little bit about that, too?
Well, I've been off the air since 1998. You know, I was a network television news correspondent for CBS and NBC beginning back in 1966. And I was on the air for about 40 years and all over the world and all over the United States, covering all the wars that we can remember, including Vietnam for more than a year, and also the guerrilla wars in Central America, and the Middle East wars, the first and second Gulf wars. So I've been around the world, but I began right here. My roots are deep here in West Virginia. I was born in Charleston. I was raised here. I went to St. Albans High School and graduated from St. Albans High, went to Morris Harvey College, which is now the University of Charleston, was graduated with a political science and history degree from there. And so I love my state. I live not far from Rabel Mountain. You know, I have a mountain named after me.
I didn't know you had a mountain, Ed.
My grandfather and great uncles grew up on that mountain, and I used to go out there and visit. I still go out to Rabel Mountain all the time to because there's still some Rabels living out there. And so I love the state. I love the people. I don't diss coal because I know how important it has been to our region. But I think it's time now to think about a post-coal economy, because if we don't, you know, we're going to wake up one of these days and coal will be gone, and all we'll be left with is the residue. So I talk about that in my book. It's called Ed Rabel Reports, Lies, Wars, and Other Misadventures. And I talk about my beginnings here and about leaving the state and going out. I had really a very fortunate opportunity to go to work for CBS News and then NBC, and some folks may remember me from that time. But I decided to come back home to West Virginia to see, to reconnect with my roots, and to try to see, look around and see whether there was an opportunity for me to pay back, because I think that's important for people to do. You know, I think it's important for people to try to serve, and that's it. Not to sound fatuous here, I don't mean to do that, but I did look around, and I saw that not much had changed, quite frankly, in the time that from the time I'd left almost half a century ago, and I wondered about that. I wondered why it was, and I think in part it has to do with how we are so beholden to that industry which has meant so much for us in the past, but at the same time has been an albatross around our neck in many ways. And so what I am about is not to destroy West Virginia, on the contrary, or to destroy its patrimony. What I'm about is that the people ought now look to make their economy more robust, so that there will be more jobs here, so that people will want to come here and invest, so that we are no longer undereducated as we are today. And so we might be able to not lift ourselves up by our own bootstraps, but guarantee that those benefits that are coming to us right now, and look to the future, so that in the future the best and the brightest don't leave. You know, that's what happened. I left the state thousands and thousands. Since 1950, we've lost 40% of our population. 40%. And the reason for that is that the people who have the money to send their kids off to college, for example, out of the state, and they send them off and they say, you know, to them, don't ever come back here because there's no opportunity for you here. Well, I want to be able to see a state in which there are opportunities, where people can remain here, where people can rear their families in a clean, safe environment. That's what I would like to see, Bob.
Well, I understand that completely, very, very well, Ed. Because once one something funny happens when people, when West Virginians leave West Virginia, no matter where they can go, as you can attest, whatever far-flung corner of the globe it may be, West Virginians pine for home.
They do, right?
And
they should.
In my case, it was a matter of I'm the only one in my family who was actually not born in West Virginia. And the West Virginia pining was so profound that I came back here. We visited a lot, but I came here because I wanted to experience what it was that so motivated and so filled my own family with love and adoration. And I had a good bit of that, but then I found out about mountaintop removal, and a lot changes when that light goes on. You get a little bit more ferocious about things, I suppose, because for all the times that I've been told that a tree hugger like me should go back where I came from, all I can do is say, for instance, I saw a Facebook post today from someone saying coal is our heritage, and I was on the keyboard before I knew what happened, Ed, because I said, no, coal's not my heritage. My people have been in this state since before the first lump of coal was ever scraped out of a hillside. Our heritage in West Virginia is one of independence. Our heritage in West Virginia is one of self-determination. Our heritage in West Virginia is one of grit and courage. And all of those things were here long before the first coal company came and did an Appalachian person out of his land by virtue of the broad form deed. That's the West Virginia that I see, fighting for. My grandfather, my great-grandfather, uncles, my father, were all in the mines, but they did not self-define by virtue of their status as miners. They self-defined by virtue of their history and sense of place here. And to a certain extent, I think that really does make West Virginia unique, because there's so much movement out in many other states. But honest to Pete, I've met West Virginians all over this country, and they say, well, do you know where Culloden is? And I go, oh, heck yeah. And they say, that's where my family's from, and gosh, we love to go back whenever we can. So I thank you, Ed Rabel, for your willingness to stand up for this state, the people of this state, and the future of this state. And I wish you the very best, and I hope this is only the first of many conversations that we will have as you proceed in your candidacy.
Well, I welcome that. Thank you so much, Bob, and thanks for the good work that you're doing on the air here. I do appreciate that. And I know West Virginians who listen to you and others outside the state appreciate it as well. Thank you so much for having me on.
Thank you, Ed, and best of luck.
Thank you.
Bye now. Second Congressional District candidate for Congress, Ed Rabel. Ed Rabel for Congress is where you'll find him on Facebook. I have deep, deep respect for what Ed is trying to accomplish. And frankly, when I realized that I wanted to talk to someone about what was happening in the Kanawha Valley with this poisoning of the water supply, you know, for profit, remember, it was done for profit, I realized that there would be none better than Ed Rabel, R-A-B-E-L, Ed Rabel, to talk to. Because he has a clear-eyed vision for what West Virginia not only should be, but can be. It gets really, really frustrating to see some of the responses. You know me, I ought to know better, but I don't. I ought to know better than to read the comments on stories about things that matter to me, but there it was today. Let me see if I can find this and share it with you real quick. This was over at Alternet. And it was a story, West Virginia declares state of emergency after huge chemical spill. Like I said, I ought to know better, especially where West Virginia is concerned, because I am prickly about this. It's one thing for we here in this tormented state to poke a little fun at each other, but it's another thing entirely when you realize the bigotries and the biases that obtain out in the larger world. Now, remember, Alternet is a liberal progressive site, okay? So here's a progressive, here's a liberal out in the wider nation. West Virginians are getting what's coming to them in spades. This is what happens when for generations you elect the same sorry pro-coal politicians and they in turn hand the fate of the people over to the likes of Consol and Murray. This person couldn't even apparently be bothered to learn the name of Freedom Industries. As much as I despise both Consol and Murray Energy, neither one of them directly poisoned the water supply of 300,000 people. It was one of the folks that maybe they do business with, but it wasn't them. This liberal progressive from outside the state of West Virginia says, the stupidity of the southern West Virginians needs to be experienced to truly, T-R-U-E-L-Y, by the way, believe. For generations, they have convinced themselves that they are the salt of the earth for working in wretched conditions, dying on the job every day, and living in poverty with the rest of their family in what can be best described as a post-apocalyptic wasteland. West Virginians have always failed to realize that they are our Morlocks, our untouchables. I fear that the people of wild, wonderful West Virginia will be nothing but diseased, slack-jawed rubes until the very last of them drops dead from cancer or diabetes. They are their own worst enemy. Wow. With friends like that, yeah. And in a moment like that, you begin to comprehend why it is that maybe people who are clannish, or, and that's clan with a C, clannish or insular, as we here are often described, tend to look a little askance when the outsider comes in and says, well, we're here to civilize you people. Diseased, slack-jawed rubes we are. If some wingnut had said that on a website maintained by, oh, I don't know, Freeperville or Redneck State or Radio TV Rwanda, yeah, well, okay, that's some ignorant damn teabagger. This is probably someone who wants to save the Venezuelan Vestal Virgins, etc., etc., etc. But who, when it comes to Appalachia, declares that everybody here lives in poverty, in a post-apocalyptic wasteland, and are diseased, slack-jawed rubes who will drop dead from cancer or diabetes. Yeah, you know what? We probably will drop dead from cancer, a lot of us. We already know that we do. And heart disease. And gastrointestinal diseases. And yeah, diabetes plays a part. But somewhere along the way, our buddy here, the commenter, has probably profited by the blood spilled by Appalachian people. By those same diseased, slack-jawed rubes. And you can find this in a number of places. Asa, thank you very much, Asa. Asa got us started with our fundraising for this evening, followed in short order by our buddy Sal. That means we are only $250 away from finishing out the week okay in terms of finances. Thank you very much both to Asa and Sal. Asa sent me a piece from Wonkette. And the headline is, Coal Fights Back Against Obama's War on Coal with Chemical Attack in West Virginia. And there's some truth in that. Remember, this poison is used routinely in communities where people live every day in the state of West Virginia to wash the coal that will get on the train, that will go somewhere and either get on a boat and go to China or the Netherlands or Germany or India or Russia, and then a lot of it's put on a train and run somewhere else to be burned so that our buddy who thinks of us as diseased, slack-jawed rubes can have a lighted-up room whenever he or she flips the wall switch. So, Alex Ruthroff over at Wonkette writes, Coal. It's dirty, brittle, and buried deep underground. In a word, it's American. Which is why Fox News declared that Obama declared a war on it when he announced his intention to promote fuel switching from coal to gas for electric production. Your move, coal. And Alex Ruthroff then declares that the coal industry has spilled an unknown quantity of 4-methylcyclohexane methanol into the Elk River. The only problem is no coal company did that. Wait a minute, let's get this right. Freedom Industries, which is intimately associated with the coal industry, but not the coal industry per se. I mean, we got to be a little bit factual here once in a while, right? So, the report continues, the governor of West Virginia, who is named Earl Ray Tomlin, because of course he is, has declared a state of emergency, which is pretty much the unofficial motto of West Virginia anyway. You know what? There's truth in that. If we were really, really honest about things, a state of emergency would exist over southern West Virginia's mountaintop removal sacrifice zone every day of every week, of every month, of every year. because the places are toxic and they are horrors. And yes, emergencies exist every day. Hell, the mountains themselves are falling apart. Mr. Ruth Ralph continues, 300,000 West Virginians are being told not to drink their tap water, make baby formula, shower, brush their teeth, or basically even look directly at their faucets. And no, he adds, we will not be making the expected, do you really need to tell West Virginians not to shower or brush their teeth? Hee-haw. Joke, because that is uncivil and makes them less inclined to vote for the folks we like. I like that uncivil came first. And then there's some snark about Freedom Industries. And let's remember, all these businesses that have been put out of business for God knows how long until the water is safe to run again, and how do you even know what it means to have the water safe to run again? I mean, would just you tell me. You're not here in almost level West by God, Virginia. What would you do if you found out that poison had been in your pipes, potentially... poison that could induce nonstop vomiting. If that had been in your pipes, for a few days, would you feel good? I mean, even after the water company says, hey, the water we sell you for a profit is safe again, how safe would you feel letting decent water run through those pipes that had the poison in it? Wouldn't you be inclined to go and basically just replumb the whole damned house? Wouldn't you? What if you're running a restaurant and somebody gets sick because the pipes still had poison in them? You see where I'm going? Freedom Industries did that. But all of these people... presumably are going to have a cause of action against Freedom Industries, whom I will bet you a dollar to a donut don't have anything resembling the reserves on hand to cover something of this magnitude. There they sat, hard by the Elk River, a mile and a half from the intake of the water supply, with ungodly poisons in 48,000-gallon storage tanks, which, by the way, no one was ever required to inspect, no one was ever required to obtain a permit to have, and you're telling me that they got an insurance policy that's going to pay for the loss for the lost revenues of all the hospitals, all the daycare centers, the schools, the universities, the restaurants, the bars, anywhere that needs to use water, which is basically everywhere. And then the people who were directly exposed to the stuff. Oh, hell no, they're not. So here's how it plays out. A bunch of people and six lawsuits are either in the process of being filed or have been filed against Freedom Industries. And probably the reason we didn't hear anything from Freedom Industries until about 1 o'clock this afternoon is because they were getting all lawyered up. I had this vision of the CEO of Freedom Industries sitting there in the waiting room of one of those sleazy law firms, Jackson and Kelly, Spillman, Thomas Battle, you know, the people who defend these filthy poisoners. I had this vision of the CEO sitting there and one of the assistants coming out and saying, would you like a glass of water? Cue the music, you know. It's not out of the tap, is it? You know, I poisoned that shit. Oh, no, we have lots of bottled water on hand. That's wonderful. Yeah, in that case, I'll have a glass of water. But anyway, so this guy is not going to be personally liable. This guy is not going to be reduced to poverty, which he should be, and tarred and feathered, and ridden out of town on a rail, and put in prison for the rest of his natural-born life. None of that's going to happen to him. And all these lawsuits that are going to be filed, well, you know what Freedom Industries is going to do? They're going to declare bankruptcy after all the judgments are in. and then they're going to reconstitute themselves and just change the lettering at the plant and call themselves Liberty Industries. You see, no way is Earl Ray Tomlin, who once upon a time, upon being told about studies regarding mountaintop removal, giving people cancer and so forth, said, well, every day somebody says something makes you sick. He's not going to push through a legislative agenda that says that these people can't, that they can't operate and poison us for profit. I'm hoping that somewhere out there is an enterprising young journalist or researcher or someone who is carefully going through Earl Ray Tomlin's and every member of the West Virginia legislature's political contribution disclosures to find the names of the folks who run Freedom Industries. Anyway, Mr. Ruth Rauer continues and said, instead, let's laugh and groan at the name of the chemical company that caused the spill, Freedom Industries. Surely Ayn Rand's desiccated nether parts are stirring as she lies deathless in her grave, slowly turning to coal herself. Just kidding, she's been made of coal all along. And then Alex Ruthrauer concludes, so big whoop, 16% of West Virginia's population can't use their precious tap water, and their precious hospitals and nursing homes and schools can't operate. That's nothing compared to the estimated 10,000 Americans who die prematurely every year due to emissions from coal-fired power plants, not to mention the shameful travesty that is mountaintop removal mining. And here everyone's in a lather about a little skin blistering, vomiting, and burning eyes and throats. It's like they've never eaten at Olive Garden before. Ho, ho, ho. We are the most easily derided, most forgettable, most unimportant group of citizenry in the entire United States. Without a doubt. So that's just a bit of an update on life in the sacrifice zone. I should tell you that I have found out that loved ones in one of the affected counties are not affected because they're not on a water system that is provided by the fine profiteering folks at West Virginia American Water. It, by the way, the West Virginia Department of Environmental Protection did issue a statement early in the day saying, or maybe late last night, saying that this particular chemical is, quote, not particularly lethal, unquote. You know, when the West Virginia Department of Environmental Protection starts throwing around adverbs like that, well, I wouldn't run off to Reno or the hospital based on the accuracy of that statement. So, it is, I should note, Friday on the front porch. And we have lots to talk about this evening. If you want to jump into the Horn Malloy Skype chat group for one part of Friday on the Front Porch, or if you just want to go on hold on the traditional phone lines, 304-658-3333, both are just fine, and we will have ourselves what I hope will be one whale of a conversation to wrap up this very, very interesting week. Thanks going out to Diane. Thank you very kindly, Diane. Diane has taken us down to $220 to raise for this evening, and it is much appreciated. If you'd like to help Diane and Asa and Sal out, it would be a wonderful, wonderful thing. PayPal buttons at headonradionetwork.com. So, too, is the traditional mail address. And, by the way, thanks to Irish Dave for kicking in. Sent me a note last night saying it was in the mail. So if you prefer to work by the mail, just shoot me a note so I can count it in among the goal. Thanks to thank you, Anthony. Thank you very kindly for helping out. $215 to go. And we have other thanks to extend before we break here. I want to make sure that I get them all in. Thank you to Kathleen. Subscription payment or subscription contribution. Thank you to Kathleen as well. For helping out this evening. All right, break time, and then we'll fire up Friday on the Front Porch. This is listener-supported conversation radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. one of these days I would like to hear that song played live somewhere. That is, of course, from the first Dire Straits album, Water of Love. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is Friday on the Front Porch for this Friday, the 10th day of January, 2014. Two or maybe four or perhaps five, or we really don't know how many days into the poisoning of the water supply of some 300,000 people we are. Because, well, it was only discovered when people started calling the West Virginia DEP saying, the air stinks and so does my water. What the is up with that, you boobs? Well, I don't know the "you boobs" part was in there, but, well, they are, so. So, folks, we do know. We know this much, that Governor Earl Ray Tomlin, every day somebody says something makes you sick. Governor Earl Ray Tomlin only issued the don't drink the water warning, don't brush with it, don't bathe with it, don't do the dishes with it, don't cook with it. Okay, maybe you can flush with it. He only issued that at 6:30 p.m.-ish last night, when in fact the West Virginia Department of Environmental Protection had known there was a problem for about 12 hours prior to that. Maybe 11. And we know there was a problem prior to that because, well, it became... And I got to drive through Charleston tomorrow. Maybe I'll have something to report on Monday. But anyway, that's... that. Right, I agree, Marty. Not particularly lethal. Invite him over for a drink. And, yeah, as much animus as I feel toward the profit-driven... Greedhead who runs or ran Freedom Industries. The only thing in the world I want to do, I don't want to see him dragged through the streets, tarred and feathered, ridden out of town on a rail. No, hell no. I just want to see him drink a glass of water. And that's tough one. That's punishment, isn't it? Welcome to the 21st century. It is Friday on the Front Porch. Let us first and foremost bring on the stalwarts of the Horn Malloy Skype chat group, as moderated by the indefatigable Duncan. Hey, gang.
Hi, Bob.
Skype group roll call. We got Jeremy.
He had to step out for a minute. I think he just left it on.
Okay, and we got Greg.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Greg. And, of course, we have you, Duncan.
Mm-hmm.
And Will from Chicago is with us.
Hello, Bob.
Hey, Will.
And we'll have some more people here shortly. I put out the bat signal. Sergi's going to be in.
Okay, great. And folks who have never done this on the Skype side before can simply send a Skype contact request to Sparky Dunk on Skype. Just look him up. You'll find him. And it's really quite easy, isn't it, Duncan?
Yep, simple.
All right, and so on the phone side. Hey, welcome to Friday on the Front Porch.
Hey, Bob, it's Mark.
Hey, Mark, welcome to the conversation. Let's bring one more on. Hey, welcome to Friday on the Front Porch.
Hey, Bob, it's Jim.
Hey, Jim, welcome, one and all.
Thank you.
Let me just ask first off, what did you think of Ed Rabel's conversation?
I thought it was very good, very interesting. I kept trying to picture him as a reporter.
If you go to his Facebook page, you'll see a picture of him in his boonie hat from back in his covering Vietnam days. I think you'll recognize him immediately.
Oh, okay.
Because that's when I remember a lot of young reporters that like Dan Rather and that. From my young days before I went in the service, watching Vietnam War coverage, because it was, you couldn't escape it.
No, and yet to the extent that it seemed inescapable at the time, there was actually a civic good being performed in that inescapability, Duncan, as we can tell by virtue of what we never got to see of, say, our attack on the people of Iraq or Afghanistan.
For many people in this country, it was as if no one knew we were at war, and many vets who have returned home from those conflicts said that a lot of people acted as if we were not a nation at war, which puzzled them because here they were fighting.
Well, and the thing about Ed is, you know, he covered Vietnam. As he said, he covered both Gulf Wars, or the first Gulf War. He covered he covered both Israeli wars. He covered the Central American nightmare, fostered and brought to you by Ronald Reagan, by the way.
Yeah.
And having seen that many torn up corners of the globe, I imagine, and he sort of alluded to it, it certainly informs one's view of West Virginia upon returning to it. And one of the things he didn't mention is that he's also been a journalism professor. So he knows what is missing in the coverage today.
Right. If you want news today, you have to actively seek it out, because you won't generally see it on the big three, or for that matter, the cable channels much.
Well, consider this, gang. I looked at two or three different major media outlet reports on this disaster in West Virginia. Of those three, none of them actually mentioned, and neither did the Charleston Gazette, that the chemical was used in the processing of coal. And I thought, my God, the clampdown has already started. But then, of course, all the gaskets blew, and I hit the roof and ran screaming around the room a little bit when I saw that tweet from the West Virginia Coal Association. And by the way, these are the folks who run the Friends of Coal.
Hey, Bob?
Yeah.
They did mention it. They did mention what the chemical was used for.
Who did?
CNN did.
Not in their earlier reports today. They didn't.
Well, I guess it takes a while for things to get on air and for things to be verified. But it was on CNN and MSNBC.
But
I really
hit the roof when I saw the Fiends of Coal tweeting that if it's good enough to wash coal, it's good enough to wash me. And I immediately thought, okay, let's dunk some of you rotten bastards in this stuff and let you scrub away. Because this, and they were having fun because it's a sudsing agent, you know, just like dishwashing liquid.
Oh, wait, we fill them in and they end up being as insane and as hideously deformed as the Joker from the Batman comics?
Yeah. Well, we don't know. We don't know. I mean, does anybody have any plumbing experience in the group?
No, I was a print reporter, and I will say that I could have, within five, 10 minutes, found someone who could tell me what a chemical was about.
I know that in construction, they have to treat the pipes before you can drink the water out of it. They have to run a chemical in there and then flush it real good, and then they usually do a test on it, and then they'll put a sign on the drinking fountain, or remove the sign off the drinking fountain, unsafe to drink.
And that's that's just with ordinary construction processes. A lot of I don't know what it's like in other parts of the country, but a lot of folks here have PVC pipes. You know, gone are the days of copper plumbing. And toward that end, one wonders what a solvent like this, because it is a solvent, what does a solvent do like this do to plastic plumbing piping?
I don't know. They use a solvent on the outside of the pipe when they're putting it together.
Yeah.
use a primer that helps the glue attach. It etches the pipe. The primer etches the pipe.
Right.
So.
Yeah, I mean, I've glued a little bit of the stuff together in my time. I just don't. What would a process even look like whereby people were, whereby it was certified that it was safe to continue using your existing plumbing?
I guess the water testing business would be good after this. I know I'd want to have my water tested before I start drinking it.
Yeah, but a lot of people can't afford that.
Well, I think that would be the water company's responsibility, wouldn't it?
Not inside your home.
Oh. Here's one for you, if you want to hear this, Bob. I called the Beckley Water Company today. They're not the water company per se, but they do private water. Okay, you can buy it.
Yeah.
Brought to your home. And I talked to the girl about this, and she told me, she said, we process city water. However, for every 3 gallons of water that we put in to make 1 gallon of water, we only have 1 gallon left because there's so much stuff in the water that's what they come out with 1 gallon. It takes 3 gallons to make 1 gallon.
Probably not surprising given the nature and location of where you are.
That's what she told me. She said, yeah, it's 3 for 1, and they said they had to remove so many things from it, and that's the reason that they were in business and have been in business. And so we'll talk to them tomorrow or Monday, and I think I'm going to have some water brought in.
Might not be a bad idea.
No, but I mean 3 for 1, 3 gallons of water to make 1 gallon of potable water. Now, that's something I didn't know. And it's something I certainly found out today to my chagrin.
It is... I mean, I'm left almost speechless by a lot of this, because we talk, we're water-based organisms, and when you poison the water that goes into the water-based organism generally does not respond well.
No, it doesn't. As a matter of fact, whenever you see these doomsday programs and stuff like this, the very first or second thing after any type of apocalypse would be the need for potable water. I mean, that's right after, I guess, shelter from whatever created the apocalypse. But they said, you know, that would be the very first or second order priority. And these were a group of scientists sitting around, you know, trying to troubleshoot a apocalyptic situation. Can't live without water. What, 3 days? 4 days, maybe?
Four days tops.
I mean, there have been people who have been marooned in rafts and stuff like that who have managed to survive. I mean, I'm not talking about lifeboat with Tallulah Bankhead, but I mean, for example, the stories that were told by a number of survivors of the Indianapolis after it was torpedoed. And the ones who weren't devoured by sharks, the second thing was guys who just absolutely went out of their heads and, you know, for lack
drank
of
salt water.
And drinking their own urine. Yeah, exactly. And then all of a sudden just went over the side and said, it's time to go. And the Navy didn't know about that for, oh, hell over a week. And that was the very ship that had carried the atomic bomb to the Marianas. Or to Tiniana, wherever. You know, that plane took off with Colonel Tibbetts at the helm. But nonetheless, the Indianapolis was just basically left in a bad situation because there were no radio reports from it, and the Navy just sort of ignored it. But these guys, when you're left out, you know, you know, in that situation, it's like the poem from Samuel Taylor Coleridge, water, water everywhere, but not one drop to drink.
Nor any drop to drink. Well, eventually, among other things, we have learned that that FEMA is involved. They were said last night to be trucking water to the West Virginia Air National Guard base in Berkeley County, West Virginia, and it was all then being loaded onto C-130s, which would fly down to Yeager Airport in Charleston and begin distribution. I don't know what the current status of that is, but I doubt if FEMA bottles its own water, so therefore it's getting bought.
Of course, it has to be.
And one can only guess what kind of prices it's bought at. But who cares? Because people need water. I mean, I know some people have been through this process. People who dealt with Katrina know what this is. People who went through hurricanes in South Florida know what this is. People who have been blown away by tornadoes know what this is like. It is past bizarre and past frightening when there is no water. It gets pretty grave pretty quick.
And that was one of the big problems in the Philippines after the super typhoon hit. Namely, people were lining up for water for days and waiting and waiting. And although we're in better shape in West Virginia than what happened in the Philippines, this is still going to be a massive operation to get water to people. And again, we don't know what the long-term effects will be. Will this chemical, if it's running through the pipes and with an 11-hour delay, I'm sure some of this has been through some pipes into people.
Oh, no. It's not. No, we know it went through the pipes, Will. What we've got to find out now is what went through people. I mean, we're talking about people who were getting out of baths and drinking and cooking and, yeah.
You know, Bob, you know, another thing that they also mentioned on the TV today was about the nature of the business in Charleston, how Charleston is a chemical city, and they just basically manufacture a lot of chemicals in Charleston that are much more dangerous than this particular.
Oh, gosh, yes. What was it, 5 years ago that Charleston almost got turned into Bhopal Part 2? Because, yeah, they manufactured the same poisonous chemical that wiped out Bhopal, methyl isocyanate?
Yeah, that's right. Got it. And they didn't mention that by name, but I remember that report, and I thought about, But Charleston is basically a chemical city. It's an ugly city, and it stinks there.
Now.
It does. It smells.
I lived there for a couple of years. It only stunk once in a while, but there was always the possibility you knew that something disastrous was going to go on. And every time something like this seems to happen, the warning system seems to fail.
Yeah, 11 hours. It's been through the pipes leaching. Who knows what and who's know what it's going to do to people. And, I mean, an 11-hour delay makes no sense because if there's something like a tornado, well, you can hit the buzzer. I mean, there needs to be investigation into this because this does not seem responsible in any way.
I just love Tomlin's response this morning. It's non-toxic, but the only thing you can use it for is to flush your toilet. You can't drink it. You can't wash dishes with it. You cannot bathe in it. You cannot wash clothes, but it's non-toxic. And that was what killed me this morning when I heard that.
Oh, he's backpedaling for all he's. I mean, he's spinning for all he's worth, Jim. Like I said, I wouldn't bet money against the idea that he's taking political contributions from those people, because you know they're the kind of folks that give money to the Earl Ray Tomblins of the world. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah, certainly. Yeah.
I mean, look, and I don't mean to just beat a dead horse, but
No, you're not beating a dead horse. You're beating a very live horse in this situation.
I mean, the idea, because the WVDEP was involved in some serious CYA work early, too.
Got it.
And they were, well, we had no idea. We just found out when somebody called us. We never inspected them. They never had to be inspected. There is no record of any inspection of that site going back all the way to 1990. Does West Texas come to mind?
Yes. Also, what also came to mind is that oil spill in, was it North Dakota that was discovered?
You betcha.
By farmer checking things and, oh, well, we didn't know this had been going on for days. This is the problem when you don't have industry regulation. The industries say, we'll regulate ourselves, and they do what they did in the late 1800s, namely put all the externalities on the people around them who are not the bigwigs in the company. And if a few people in Appalachia or the west side of Chicago or Gary or what have you get sick and die because, well, we're dumping our stuff. Oh, well, can't have an omelet without breaking a few eggs.
Well, what was the book by Upton Sinclair about the meatpacking industry and stuff like that, speaking of other toxic substances that were fed to people?
Oh,
the blackboard jungle?
No, the jungle, just the jungle.
Just the, well, yeah, okay, the jungle, yeah. Pardon me. But nonetheless, I mean, without regulation, these people just have carte blanche to just put out on the market anything that they can get away with.
And this proves the essential fallacy, does it not, of the fantastical engagement in non-reality of people like libertarians who say, well, the industry will regulate itself and bad industries will go out of business. Well, maybe the bad industry will go out of business, but it'll only go out of business after it's poisoned a few hundred thousand people.
You're welcome.
Yes. And this is my key criticism of libertarianism. It seems to forget that the only way society survives
you should be helpful
by having
you got it pretty well tweaked up.
Or because a good industry who tries to do the right thing can't compete with the others who don't, and they go out of business.
Well, that too. Stand by, guys. Let me bring a couple more lines on the phone side. Hey, welcome to Friday on the Front Porch.
Hi, this is Kevin.
Hey, Kevin, stand by, please.
Okay.
Okay, welcome to Friday on the Front Porch.
Hello, this is Dan.
Hey, Dan, good to have you. I think some of this audio weirdness will clear up momentarily. It's just a matter of the tired old phone processor getting acclimated to everybody being involved. See, it's going away. Very nice. Well, it's good to have you, Kevin, and it's good to have you, Dan.
Thank you. Bob, I wanted to bring up the idea of these the pipes inside people's homes. If it's all PVC, it is far more flexible than copper, and that flexibility implies porosity. So if this stuff has been flowing through people's pipes, the question, I guess, would be how long is the water going to be drawing some of that out of those little pores? Think microscopically now, those pores in those porous pipes. And as far as the mains are concerned, as an old telephone company locator, I saw plenty of water main breaks, and they were always replaced with this heavy black plastic in lieu of the cast iron of years gone by. So I would assume that you guys have a similar situation in West Virginia that we do here slightly north of you, in that because of the freezing and thawing and the movement of the earth in those episodes, that the plastic was placed in lieu of cast iron for its flexibility. Again, porosity. So if this stuff is flowed through the mains, one might presume that it would be present for a bit. Who knows how long? So if there's a clean bill of health dished out maybe a month or two from now, maybe not so much. Just something to ponder.
And it is worth pondering. And the problem, I think, is that that's all we can do right now is ponder.
Sure. With a company that at the outset was dishonest in failing to notify the authorities and therefore the public at large, they've exposed themselves as being the scoundrels. And I suppose that DEP?
Yeah, the WVDEP.
Who knows whose pocket they're in?
Oh, I do.
Okay. The industry, yes?
Yes, the industry.
Sure.
Any industry. You know, all regulations are job-killing regulations. All regulations are bad. All inspections are bad. All permitting processes are bad. And we've had three successive gubernatorial administrations who have stated to the DEP that their job is to issue permits and not to answer questions. So it must be that much better when they don't even have to issue a permit or answer or ask questions.
Right.
Well, I've got a question for you and Jim, Bob.
Okay.
Where this is at? I've heard about five counties infected, but what
nine,
about
nine.
Downstream rivers?
Nine counties.
Nine counties now. Well, with five, what I initially heard. So nine counties now. What about downstream rivers? Are you or Jim affected by that?
No, I'm upstream.
How much of the state?
Jim and I are both upstream from all of this stuff. Just to give you a quick overview of the drainage of this part of West Virginia, the New River joins the Gauley River at Gauley Bridge, West Virginia, to form the Kanawha River. The Kanawha River is intersected, it is joined by the Elk River, which is the Elk River in question, or which is the river in question, at Charleston. Okay, so theoretically, everybody outside Kanawha County to the east of Charleston, like me, is theoretically okay. But as this, I guess we can assume that since this is a hexane, it's going to be lighter than the water itself, so it's not necessarily prone to sinking and getting into the riverbed. So what's going to happen? One, I think we're getting lowballed on how this was a 48,000 gallon tank, and they're saying, well, 5,000 gallons got out. Bullshit. I don't believe it.
I heard it was 15.
You see,
why should you believe anything when they've already proven to be
liars,
inaccurate liars, and this state of emergency wasn't declared for 11 hours. This is why you need an independent investigation outside of the state.
Hey, Bob.
Time to bring in the feds.
But just to answer Kevin's question real quick, what's going to happen downstream? Well, at Point Pleasant, West Virginia, the Kanawha enters the Ohio River.
Which?
I guess theoretically it's going to dilute somewhere along the way, maybe by the time it reaches the Gulf of Mexico.
That's what I'm wondering is, and if this is anything like Corexit, speaking of the Gulf of Mexico, it doesn't dilute all that well. So how many people potentially, especially if the company withheld this information for days or weeks as opposed to hours, how many people are potentially affected on not just West Virginia, but the whole southeastern coast?
That question is unanswerable, Kevin.
I know.
Hey, Bob.
But it's...
Yeah, Mark.
Hey, I just wanted to mention to all the guys listening, did you catch the press briefing, Bob, with the guy with the British accent at 6 o'clock on CNN?
No, I did not.
You know, what a jackass. He's not even American. And
was he from West Virginia? I mean, was he from American water?
No, he was from Patriot, whatever the name of that company is.
Freedom Industries?
Freedom, excuse me, yeah. And probably tied in with that other Freedom. Any case, the guy had to be told. I have to commend the reporters. They were saying, no, you need to move back over here. You need to get back over there. And they were doing a good job of getting him to calm down and tell his lies calmly. But what he did say, when we're talking about 5,000 gallons, or like Jim may have mentioned just a second ago, Jim may have heard 16,000 gallons. He claimed in the briefing that they've gotten rid of two tanks of 37,000 gallons apiece. So, you know, and they've moved them off site. So, you know, I'm not saying that couldn't have been done, but that process had to start probably before that. The leak probably maybe even got to the public, so they knew. Or knowing that it was going to go to the public, whatever the case was.
Okay, that's a fair question. How long does it take to pump out 37,000 gallons of toxin?
Well, you have to have it. It can go rather quickly, but you have to be able to put it into vehicles, you know, that are able to move it. So, I mean, that's going to take a little bit of coordination. So, I'm sure they're going to do that. In any case, I'll back off here, but I just wanted to tell you on a personal note, the one thing that you responded to earlier in the show, about the comment on Facebook, it has been talked about on the internet. There are paid, provocateurs, Bob, that may be, and you know that, they're actually right wing language experts to appear to be a left wing. I'm not saying there aren't callous, ignorant left wingers, but usually left wingers are a little more caring about.
Not where West Virginia is concerned, Mark.
Well, I'll take your word for it, Bob. But the guy's language that you quoted seems to be rather just the words that you threw out there. And you know your people better than I.
Well, no, I've just seen it happen too many times. I've seen too many times that West Virginia has it coming. That West Virginia earned this. I've seen, of course, the Upper Big Branch disaster happened because, you know, coal is poisonous and deadly and blah 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 blah. And every time, no, this I'm pretty good at doping out troll. This wasn't some right wing troll just pretending.
Well, then I appreciate that. I just would say that. Even though I kind of have a high-pitched voice, I'll be 57 in February, and in conjunction with Mr. Rabel, I did look him up, Bob, and I went to his Facebook page for the other listeners. He is a very popular person. I do recollect seeing him on the news. He always a very calm, deliberate American, very well-spoken, very non-flamboyant, very truth emanating human being. And I went to his Facebook page while I've been sitting here listening to you, and He's already commended your interview that you guys had together on his page. So he's proud to associate himself with you, and I think he's a man of integrity. And and so that makes me feel confident. And he was so very, very calm and well spoken, and a deliberate.
I would dearly love to have more people, Mark, as intelligent as him, in the Congress of the United States. Unfortunately. Sure. One of the things that I noticed in the other news that came out today, and I had no idea this wasn't already the case, but as of some news story that hit the web earlier today, for the first time, the Congress of the United States is now made up by a majority of millionaires. Hell, I thought we passed that mark a long time ago, but apparently not. And you know, that's the funny thing about money. It's not mutually exclusive that one be wealthy and intelligent, but somehow or another it winds up not being the case most of the time, or a lot of the time.
Well, that's true. And even if they're not a millionaire in Congress, they only have to be seated, what, one, two terms before they get their full retirement as a congressman?
Oh,
so
yeah,
there's a great incentive there.
Before they run.
Yeah.
They're already set.
Yeah,
right.
They don't even need the congressional pension.
They don't need that stuff. That's the reason why.
No, but I'm saying a non-millionaire, if you or I went to Congress, we need to retain that seat for at least one term. I think maybe it's two, but at least one term to get our pension.
You have 5 years to be vested.
What other job is there that after 4 years you get a full pension? You know,
yeah, they're few and far between, Kevin.
Right. And so the incentive is there for you to make as many, quote-unquote, friends as you can so you keep your seat.
And so even if you're not a millionaire, you've got that incentive to become a millionaire by serving in Congress as long as you can.
And if you don't keep your seat, you've always got the, something better being offered all along by somebody else, and they become a lobbyist.
Right, or a consultant.
Or a consultant or whatever. That's the reason a lot of them go there. It's because it's just a career progression thing.
I don't think that's how it was designed.
That's how it is.
When Jimmy Carter
designed that way, but when you got people making the laws, I think it is
for their own seats. What do you expect them to do? You know.
I just remember the quote from Benjamin Franklin when he said that a person ending their public service in the Congress should be honored to go home because it meant that they were going back to being the boss instead of being a servant.
Oh, that's almost funny nowadays, isn't it?
A bit of rank optimism from Benjamin Franklin, yes, but he was that kind of guy.
Yeah. I believe that the figure of the lobbyist progression goes something like when Jimmy Carter handed the keys to the White House to Ronald Reagan in 1981, there were fewer than 350 registered lobbyists in D.C. And by the end of Ronald Reagan's 8 years, that number had ballooned to over 10,000. And today, it is somewhere north of 35,000 registered lobbyists in D.C. I have heard those numbers often enough to believe them. I don't have any confirmation, but man, if that's the case, no wonder we've lost the control of this forbidden city, as Jim says.
Well, that's exactly right, because that's exactly what happened, and that's one of the reasons that I have been trumpeting for years on this program. It ain't Main Street, it's Wall Street, and then K Street. And God only knows the stuff that they can furnish these congressmen with, and, you know, say, well, if you don't get reelected, we've always got a spot for you, but as long as you're there, you just dictate or follow the dictates of our bidding. And that's basically what happens. They cease to represent their constituents, and they represent their own interests. Or the filling of their own rice bowl.
Sure.
If you take Jim's observation right there, and you look at the Iraq War, and you look at the corporations that were pushing with the project for New American Century, and then you look at the fact that just this week on Sunday, I didn't even need to watch it because I already knew that. I was saying this years ago. Iran won the war in Iraq, and 60 Minutes has this breaking news story that. That substantiate that fact, but you don't hear anybody from the right, all the big warmongers, whether it's the Cheney or Bush, saying, well, it's really sad that the circumstances have gone in this direction. But what it does, in other words, it's kind of like the Mars rover. People really knew how little the Mars rover was, but all they had to do was dangle that carrot in front of the Americans and say, look what we're getting ready to do, and we're such a bloodthirsty nation. Everything that we do when it comes to armed conflict, everybody immediately psychologically goes right back to World War II, where there were some heinous things going on. But not every situation is World War II. And so our corporations, politicians do not go to Washington, D.C. and get corrupted. They don't get selected to show up to defend the corrupted unless they are already corrupt before they go there. They are selected prior to even – they go through an interviewing process. And actually, at the top of those food chains are, in fact, the Charles and David Koch from Koch Industries. I mean, they literally – I mean, they're – so, I mean, it's just – they're just spokesmen for Wall Street. This is a corporatization right in our face, and these are the results. And to my fellow veterans in the audience – the retired electrician and Jim and people sympathetic to the military, one of the same things they teach anybody that goes out in the field is you never shit or piss upstream. And that's what happened at Andersonville, which killed all the soldiers when they hung the Swiss commander who wanted the commission in either army. He would do anything for it. So the point is, those tanks should never have been put in that position above geographically of population center, so close to the water, and then would have no inspection since 1990. When they get done with this investigation, which is, I pray to God that it's going to be underway, and it sounds like on the news they are speaking to that fact. Obviously it will be, but the point is, that company needs to be put out of business. They should not be allowed to reconfigure in any configuration. And any bill, their insurance company, once they declare, like Bob Kincaid said, bankruptcy, then their insurance company will pay for it. And I just only pray that...
But Mark, the insurance company is only on the hook to policy limits.
Well, I don't doubt that. They're kind of like the,
And frankly, I mean, I'm not just sitting here trying to be negative for the sake of being negative, but I have to be realistic, Mark.
Sure.
And one of those realisms is that if the West Virginia Department of Environmental Protection is the agency charged with doing the investigation is a sham and a farce from jump.
And a cover-up.
Well, sure it is. Sure it is, Bob. But yeah.
I spoke to this vast, vast multitude of people sitting around looking for something to do, because one of the most interesting things to do would be to start building that spider's web of political contributions that I am rock solid, certain, sure have come from the top end of Freedom Industries and have gone to Earl Ray Tomlin, to Joe Manchin, to Shelley Moore Capito, to Nick Rahal, to David McKinley, okay, and probably to the attorney. See, now here's something funny. We had a news announcement earlier today about how Patrick Morrissey, the attorney general of West Virginia, was warning about price gouging. Let's talk a little bit about Patrick Morrissey, the attorney general of West Virginia. This man has had to conflict of interest himself out of a couple of lawsuits. His office is maintaining that were begun prior to his accession to the office, because his wife is a lobbyist for the drug companies that are being sued. Okay, this guy isn't even a West Virginian. He was put here by the U.S. Chamber of Commerce because he's a former drug industry rep. He was not, the Attorney General of West Virginia was not even a member of the West Virginia Bar, which is mandatory in this state in order to be a lawyer. He was not even a member of the West Virginia Bar at the time that he was elected Attorney General. Or maybe at the time that he won the Republican primary, I forget which one it is. I presume that he has since become a West Virginia lawyer, but the man is a facilitator and an enabler of corporate interests. Now, let's say that maybe the West Virginia DEP doesn't run the investigation. Let's say the Attorney General's office runs the investigation. Anybody want to put 2 cents worth of faith in the outcome of that?
Are you talking about your state of West Virginia as Attorney General?
Yes.
I'd say, well, okay. Well, this is another case for Holder's, where it has to go to the United States Federal United States Attorney's Office, where it has to go.
Oh, great! It's going to go to the Attorney General, who once represented people who admitted to engaging in corporate murder for hire. That's going to work out.
Oh, you mean the Dole murderers?
Chiquita Banana.
Sure. I understand it, and it goes right to the Supreme Court with the connections with what's his name, the Italian fellow. I mean, they all have, I mean, the whole system. This is a reflection of corporatization. It's snuck up on us, and like the caller mentioned there, when Ronald Reagan did us much damage, and I think we're just now seeing the results of much of this this false patriotism, very dangerous for our people by the minute.
You know, all these people who are principals in this thing,
are basically what my dad used to call stove lid politicians, because they were always known not to be able to steal a red hot stove lid barehanded.
That's about the size of it.
That's what he called them, stove lid politicians. Don't worry about them. They'll never steal a red hot stove lid, barehanded.
And they're getting close.
I guess you're right. Maybe they've got some type of asbestos glove or something. Who knows?
That's correct. That's correct. Yeah, they're real damn close.
And I'm being informed by Kath from Canada that she has seen video of heroic middle-of-the-road Senator Joe Manchin on CNN. I don't know if I've got the intestinal fortitude to even wonder what that man said.
I couldn't watch it. I had to look away. I had to mute it when I saw him come on.
Oh, he was responsive, and he said that those who were responsible would be held accountable, and that every measure was being undertaken by local, state, federal. You know, I mean, what else could he say? He couldn't say anything else. Whether he meant it, I don't know. But that's what he said.
Well, that brings me back to our U.S. attorney for the Southern District of West Virginia, a guy by the name of Booth Goodwin. Now, we are years out since the straight-up murder of 29 miners at the Upper Big Branch mine. And the best he's gotten so far is a plea deal with some pretty low-rent middle management types. We have not yet seen photographic images of Don Blankenship doing the perp walk in orange. And frankly, if you were to ask West Virginians to wager on that ever happening, no one would take the bet that it will.
Mm-mm. You'll never see that photo.
Oh, and Kath says, in a nutshell, don't blame coal. I don't know if she's saying that's what Joe's... I don't quite understand if she's saying that's what Joe's upshot was, but it wouldn't surprise me.
I want to respect him when I see him on television as a fellow American, but in an emergency circumstance like this, it just tears me up to watch somebody that I want to believe in knowing that they're getting ready to lie to me. And it's hard on me to watch people lie to other Americans and myself. It hurts me.
Oh, I find this pretty shocking. Kath just pointed out, she said, yeah, that's what I meant. He was defending the coal industry.
You know, lying has become an art form.
Well, I think we set ourselves up for a bit of a fall.
I mean, it really has been, Bob. I mean, God knows. I mean, people can tell lies, or they can mix just a little bit of the truth with a lie and tell a half lie. And that's been going on for a long, long time. And you and I have had many conversations about half-truths and lies. And I think, and I don't know if I can quote this correctly, a liar is a person who hides the truth. But a person who tells half-lies has simply forgotten where he placed it.
That sounds like Mark Twain or Oliver Wilde.
That came straight from Lawrence of Arabia and the part played by Claude Rains.
Yes, yes. I knew I recognized it. And in the case of Joe Manchin, he wasn't. Joe Manchin is in the Senate of the United States for the strict and express purpose of advocating on behalf of his constituent. And his constituent is neither you nor I, Jim, nor any other individual in the state of West Virginia. The constituency which Joe Manchin serves, and the same applies to Shelley Moore Capito, is the coal industry. And I commend you to think back to what Ed Rabel said. We're talking about an industry that is less than 6% of the economy of West Virginia, and yet it still runs the whole show, and when something like this happens, makes jokes about it. If it's good enough to clean coal, it's good enough to clean me.
Mm. Yeah, so was Nyquan B in Auschwitz when they gave people showers in it.
And like I said, we got stuff in chemical plants that puts that to shame.
Oh, Lord God Almighty. Charleston?
Yeah.
Oh, that's one of the nastiest places I've ever been through in my life, Bob. It is pure nasty.
There are parts that are not particularly pleasant. There are other parts that really are quite nice, but...
And, you know, there's another Charleston, South Carolina, for example, one of the oldest cities in the entire country. If you could get past the outer rim perimeter of Charleston, South Carolina, past all those mills and stuff like that, and get into the inner city, well, it's nice. But I can remember so many times when I was a cadet there and having to get up in March and assemble for breakfast formations and stuff like that, when that sulfur dioxide would come rolling across the Ashley River, it didn't give one a great appetite for breakfast.
Oh, no, no, no. I remember being a student at the University of Alabama when the wind would be blowing the right way from the pulp mill, and no, it was not an appetite enhancer.
Or Georgetown, South Carolina. That's another place. I mean, if you want to go through there and lose weight, that's a great place to go, because just going through Georgetown would be a wonderful appetite suppressant.
And I've long thought that we should, just to cut down on any confusion, we should change the name of West Virginia's state capital to Chuck Rock, so it would no longer be confused with Charleston.
Chuck Rock.
Yeah, Charles Stone, Chuck Rock. Get it? I made it funny.
So, got it.
I do, yeah.
Okay. I'm sorry, that was rather a contemptible attempt at humor.
Well, that's okay. That's successful.
Speaking of picking out trolls and people that kind of sound like they're on sort of on the left, there is on AATTP.org, there was a story about this today. So far, I think I'm the only one that's commented on it. But if anybody would like to go there and add to the comments, it was a story by Sky Palmer. And, you know, it can't hurt. Any little.
Did they get
like
it right
that,
or wrong? Or
I thought he did fairly well on it for what? They have two paragraphs to do, a post. So he did get the name of the chemical right. I was impressed with that. Because I couldn't pronounce it either. You know, when you and Ed were talking about it, I was like, yeah, I can't pronounce that either.
Oh, I can pronounce it if I've got it in front of me, but it's just, okay, yeah, methylcyclohexane methanol. Diggity.
Methylcyclohexane.
Methylcyclohexane methanol.
Yum.
As the old bumper sticker says, delicious with sweet taters.
Has anybody looked that up on Wikipedia or anything?
Now, you can look it up all day long, Kevin, and that's the thing. It's apparently a fairly recent modification or derivative, and, you know, everything on it's blank. Mutagenesis, blank. Carcinogenesis, blank. No information available. But here in America, where the precautionary principle is deemed to be something close akin to, communism, we try things first, and then, you know, we act in haste and repent in leisure. Oddly enough, you know, this is a week that we begin talking about the same one principle in one set of circumstances, and we end the week talking about it, the same principle, in a separate set of circumstances. Look at these rail cars that John Wathen was talking about, trundling all over Canada and all over the United States of America. I found out talking to an old hand from the railroad industry earlier today. Hell, I didn't know it. You can't transport tank cars full of gasoline. You can't.
No, you can't. You never could.
Well, this stuff has what did John Wathen say? 22% more volatility than gasoline, and it's on tank cars all over the country.
And is it the volatility, Bob, that is the reason that it cannot or should not be transported via rail?
Yes.
Okay.
And coupled with the fact that this stuff is also a caustic.
I did catch that. Yeah.
So, I mean, and, you know, on the rare occasions when people have said to me, well, Bob, why don't you leave West Virginia? I've gotten a little cranky a couple of times, and I said, and go where? And go where? These tank cars, I mean, my beloved Tuscaloosa, Alabama, and they're running across an ancient wooden railroad trestle? Okay, Tuscaloosa's out. But there's nowhere. There's nowhere. I mean, I love New Orleans, but Baton Rouge and Galveston and Houston and the Texas, the refineries encircle that beloved city. When I was out in San Francisco this time last year, I was learning learning from our good friend Tom just how toxic the Chevron refinery there in Richmond is. Nowhere in this country is safe because we act in haste and repent in leisure.
Several years ago, there was a woman being interviewed on NPR. The topic was the foreign substances, compounds in our bodies that we accumulate just by virtue of living in a modern world with its chemicals and solvent-based everything, and she and her daughter were tested, and they came up with it was slightly more than 100 different compounds in their bodies. And the startling thing about the entire report was that she was in one of the central provinces of Canada, halfway up, in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, I mean, and this kind of stuff has gone on. It was 2004 when the study came out that showed that the breast milk of mothers from as diverse places as New Jersey and Arizona were found to contain essential elements of rocket fuel.
Perfect.
I mean, I don't want anybody to just get all grim and glum and. But
well, it's not exactly a happy time now, is it?
No, and there's plenty that people, you know, really, if we got serious about the whole pitchforks and torches movement, we could cure some of these, and I speak figuratively, we could cure a lot of these ills. But we are an isolated, pigeonholed, segmented population, so, oh, look, the hillbillies have been poisoned again. You know, oh, look, somebody's dying down in the sacrifice zone in the Mississippi River estuary.
Yeah, sure.
And the whole country is nothing but an agglomeration of oh looks.
Right.
And if there's somewhere that you think you're safe, I'd think again if you're anywhere near a rail line.
Yep. Oh. Or what about under a power line?
Well, sure. I mean,
that causes problems too.
Nothing, nowhere is safe. And the reason nothing and nowhere is safe is because the people have sat quietly by while it was done to them. Because in some cases, they have been taught to think that regulations kill jobs and that government is evil. And in the other instance, maybe they thought that they still had a little bit of a social contract left and that somebody was looking out for their well-being to make sure that you know, their well water or their tap water wasn't poisoned. Forget it. I mean, and this is by no means any kind of a comparison. When I woke up this morning, I found out that while my county is not affected by the Freedom Industries poisoning job, I'm under a boil water advisory. I'm under a boil water advisory because the same water company, West Virginia American Water, has done such an absolutely craptastic job of maintaining its infrastructure that when the cold snap came, and, you know, we're just talking about 24 hours of zero or five below zero weather. Well, we had water mains around here popping like 4th of July firecrackers.
Well, yeah.
Very typical.
I mean, there's not a lot of brain power involved in simply burying water mains below the frost line.
Well, that costs them too much money, Bob. Don't you know that?
Well, I know the and remember, West Virginia American Water is a subsidiary of American Water, and American Water isn't owned by America.
I mean, their whole posture is reactive, not proactive. And when they react, in many cases, it's just a cover-up.
Well, their idea of reaction is minimalist at best, because any reaction is measured against what it will do to the next profit and loss statement. I mean,
that's the standard or the metric that's applied.
Same with the building materials, Bob. The building materials that we use in the country reflect the economy as well as the standards do. I mean, just the least amount of, it's just enough force to affect the circumstance for profitability. We're living in a cheaper, more sadistic, dangerous world. And,
now that's like well said. That is truth and wisdom.
Like you were saying, Bob, if the people took their country back, if the country was ran by the people, for the people, a government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from this earth. And a guy from Kentucky said that originally. But, you know, I did want to say, Bob, that I was listening to you earlier on a personal note that in reference to Mr. Rabel, that as a little boy growing up, I think West Virginia was brought to my attention by Robert Kennedy, and I didn't grow up.
There are a lot of people who share that with you, Mark.
I grew up right on the edge of the projects. My father was actually raised in government housing, and I, as a child, I lived in a bit of government housing without realizing it for a while, even though my father worked his way out of it by hook or by crook. But in other words, we can't expect compassion for any aspect of our own personal lives or anyone else's lives that we care about if we don't have compassion for someone else's lives. And I think that's what we've lost in this country. It even reflects in the way people drive. You can go to different parts of the country and people drive differently because it's just me against the world. It's just like a bunch of rats when the door goes up. If you live in a country, and I would just say, and I'm not saying people don't drive crazy in New Jersey, but if you look at the Governor Christie case that's breaking with his criminal behavior, apparently, the analogy, you could look at that breaking story with the West Virginia story is they've already got people on television. They had a lady on there with her attorney tonight, saying that she had she was a registered Republican and voted for Christie. They stated this on CNN, and that she had trepidation of going across this bridge anyway, and just the lane closures themselves had given her an anxiety attack. And this
I saw her too. Excuse me, Mark. I saw that.
Well, you know, Jim, why don't we start seeing people from West Virginia on television already saying, hey, I'm not sure what this did to my children, or you know, where are the cases of where are the West Virginians speaking out? The citizens, you know, in other words, you see a litigious society, and I'm not saying the lady didn't have a legitimate circumstance, but my point is, you're seeing citizens already hopping up with lawyers. It should be no different for West Virginia, whether they're frivolous or not. I mean, the effort should be there on the behalf of the citizen. That's my point.
Yeah, her point was this. Basically, her commute was for like 20 minutes from doorstep to doorstep, right? That what you're talking about?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, whenever they get somebody on the airwaves around here or in the public domain, they are basically, I don't know how they select them, but a lot of times they are selected for the people who simply are the biggest, and I'm not trying to be offensive here, please do not hold that to me, but they select some of the worst examples of humanity that they could possibly use to portray a member of a population. And, you know, you hear these people that talk, and they don't have any teeth, and they sound like they're from, you know, they're just hicks and stuff like that. And they always get the worst one to basically present to the rest of the nation, well, this is what this place is like. and this is what these people are like. And when I first came here, the lady that I had worked with at the MEPS told me, she said, you know, why in the hell can't they get some decent people who really represent a lot of people instead of these people they just selectively pick for the worst portrayal of any image of a population?
They do it on purpose.
I believe it is.
Sure.
Don't be surprised if you see someone on TV over this West Virginia story, you'll get at least one or two people that'll say, ordinary citizens will say they're not worried by this. I guarantee they'll get someone. It'll be that attitude of, if it's good enough to clean coal, it's good enough to clean me. You'll get someone. They'll have someone on saying that.
Well, go back to Buck Wild when that was on.
Sure.
I mean, God Almighty, if ever anything represented state badly, it was the people who ran that program until that guy died in some type of accident. But, I mean, you know, it was just, it was horrible. And when the guy died, they didn't have enough money to bury him. I think VH1 or whomever was the sponsoring entity had to pay for his funeral.
Hmm.
What program was that, Jim?
Buck Wild.
Oh, God.
And, of course, Joe Manchin inveighed mightily against Buck Wild.
And rightly so. Absolutely. But, I mean, that was just... I couldn't believe that thing when I saw it. And, you know, it was just... it did not represent, nor did it really engender an outside viewer any compassion for the people who lived here or live here.
Well, compassion is not what they're in the business of, Jim. We in West Virginia and Eastern Kentucky and Southwest Virginia and to a certain extent Eastern Tennessee, we are here when we are not being ignored. We are here for the amusement of the rest of the country so that the rest of the country can look at Appalachia and say, well, we're not like them.
Bob, the only thing I can remember that could even surpass Buck Wild is Honey Boo Boo Chow.
Yeah, but honey, but I'll bet you they sit around in their place in Georgia and say, well, at least we ain't in West Virginia.
Oh, God. I have never seen such people in my life, and how could they be on the public airways? And who in the hell would want to see that? The only thing I can see that would compare equally is Mob Wives. Now that's a real piece of work.
Well, I gotta warn you. I'll give you a little heads up. I think it's going to be on A&E. There's a new show coming in the fall, I think. That's all about hillbillies behaving badly.
Well, I mean, they have all these guys who are running moonshine, and they're talking about how they run it and how they set up their spills, and then there's one who's trying to get into the legal business of it and what he's going through to do it, and then they've got one other guy who is just almost like a Robin Hood hero. I don't know what the hell his name is. He's got a mustache, and he talks about how running moonshine is such a hard line of business. And it also makes, you know, what I'm trying to say is, and I guess we can go all the way back to Junior Johnson, you know, how, you know, it was something that they had to do, what they must do, and, you know, they spent time in prison. And then, of course, like Junior Johnson finally got away from that, I guess, and got into the NASCAR circuit. Was that his escape?
Yeah. But
from Wilkes County.
Well, I mean, there really is art involved with moonshining. You will not hear me criticize anybody. I mean, there's bad moonshine and there's good moonshine, but when you get hold of the good stuff, it's a mind-boggling experience.
Well, even the good stuff can mog your mind, let me tell you.
Oh, that's what I mean. Believe you, that's what I mean. I had a buddy whose daddy used to make it out of raisins. And whoo, Jesus, Dill Harris. I mean, you want to talk about getting right in a hurry. My word. But I'll tell you a little secret, Jim. I know a fella, not by name, who recently came back from a visit to your native soil.
In South Carolina?
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh.
And he brought with him one of the finest exemplars of the shining of the moon that I have ever tasted in my life. And it was distilled from pears.
I don't doubt it, Bob. You know, when you're going to indulge, whether it's leaf, liquid, or powder, and whether it's marijuana, whether it's illicit liquor, or even liquor that's made according to standards, my advice is to use this. They ought to have this on the label. You better have a place to sit down.
I didn't. I just remained seated.
I remember this guy that I used to smoke reefer with years and years ago. And I said, what kind of stuff is this? And he said, well, all I can tell you is this. I hope you got a place to sit down.
Well, and what happened with this particular stuff was that, you know, it, as is the proper protocol, a little splash of it was put out on the tabletop, and it was lit, and it burned just a very pretty blue, which meant that, you know, it hadn't been run through anybody's old 1948 Ford radiator or anything.
Be sure there were no bubbles in it.
No bubbles. It was as unbubbly as unbubblier than flat champagne. And burned a pretty blue, and my, hoo-wee. Righteous good.
Well, and you know, these programs they're going to put out this fall or whatever, or whenever they're going to put on A&E, they seem to be particularly interested in a lot of bizarre things, but nonetheless, they sort of promote this kind of, I guess you want to call it, Robin Hood type behavior, and these people are doing this because that's the only thing they can do, and you know, it's a hard scrabble life and all this stuff, you know. They even had, you know, the hard scrabble life when they had to go help a guy repair his still or something like that.
Well, by the way, I just had a note with some good news in it, and we can take all we can stand. Note coming in from if for folks who spend some time over in the Malloy chat room, and I think, I know he's been in ours as well, ex-sailor, just got a note saying the city council of Superior, Wisconsin, a town with which I am familiar, it's right across from Duluth, Minnesota. The city council of Superior, Wisconsin, in their haste for a few jobs, had unanimously approved funding for the city's finances to rebuild an old dock for shipping oil. The oil was to be that tar sand horror to be shipped all across the Great Lakes. An accident would have been inevitable. The Wisconsin DNR has declined to give them a permit, which will significantly delay and hopefully nix this insane idea, because that is their next ambition. They remember the train cars that blow up that we were talking about earlier this week?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, they want to put them on boats and take them across the Great Lakes. I mean, they're just looking for more places to screw up.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the way the Nazis used to want to transport heavy water across the fjords until the Norwegian resistance took care of that.
At least there was a war. At least there was a war involved with that. I mean, this
is but nothing like having a little deuterium oxide in your drinking water, right?
Well, you know, among friends.
I'm sorry, I shouldn't have said that.
It lends a nice little bit of flavor. It's like Andy Griffith in No Time for Sergeants when he said, hey, "Give me some of that lighter fluid. It adds a little flavor."
Little bouquet.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Oh God, Bob.
Hey, chat room, you guys have been awful quiet.
The Skype group, you mean?
Yeah, I mean Skype group, yeah.
We're here.
We're laughing about what Jim said, leaf, liquid, or powder. We added fungus.
Oh, yeah, don't forget the fungus.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's like the mushroom who walks into a bar and asks for a beer. And the bartender says, we don't serve your type around here. Next day, the mushroom walks back into the bar and tries to order a beer. And the bartender says, listen, we don't serve your type around here. Third day comes around. Mushroom walks back in, orders a beer. Bartender looks at him and says, I've told you, we don't serve your kind in here. And the mushroom looks at the bartender and says, "Why not? I'm a fun guy."
Just remember, when you go out to hunt them, be sure they turn blue when you pitch them.
Holy. I'm retired from all of that.
Yeah, me too. But I can remember stories of friends of mine who went to dairy farms, you know, where that would grow up, and in search of mushrooms and stuff like that. And then, of course, being run out of there by a farmer with a shotgun.
Yeah, that's...
Hey, Bob?
Yeah.
I'm sorry to interrupt. I just wanted to tell all the other the guys that are listening that I appreciate you letting me be on here tonight with you on the phone.
Oh, no trouble.
I shook John Kennedy's hand in front of Abraham Lincoln's tomb at 4 and a half, and I voted for President Carter as a young Marine, and I argued with a Marine Corps buddy of mine from Birmingham, Alabama, Michael Collinsworth, a best friend of mine. We were both embassy guards, and I said, "Mike, don't all you Southern guys stick together when it comes to voting?" And he said, "What do you mean by that?" And I said, "Well, isn't President Carter from the South? Why don't you support him?" And he said, "Well, Mark, we're Republicans." I said, "I don't understand that. He represents Abraham Lincoln values to me. I'm voting for President Carter." So I just wanted to let all you fellow Americans know that we Democrats sometimes need to be aggressive, and not aggressive in a malicious way. I am also, like Bob Kincaid, I'm a veteran for peace. But there's a time for us to stick up for ourselves, and I thank you as a fellow American for being tough to your ideals, and know that I think we, as Democrats, and I'll say that, or as liberals, we stand for integrity, and we do care about all of us that care about each other. So I just wanted to cut out here and go see my granddaughter, but I am caring about West Virginia, Bob, and watching on the news. So
I appreciate it, Mark. I very much do, and we all do. Thank you very much.
Nice, Mark.
All right, brother.
Take care, Mark.
Bye, Mark.
Have a great weekend. Kevin. Bye now.
Bye, Kevin.
Goodbye.
I don't think we're Democrats, but that's okay too.
Well, I'm a registered Democrat and have been since the moment I registered to vote.
I guess I am too.
I'm the kind of Democrat that was raised by people who had their lives absolutely saved by FDR's response to the Great Depression.
Oh, yeah. My dad came west out of Oklahoma in the early 30s with his family.
And so, wow, you do know. Yeah.
Yeah, and my dad always said, you know, my dad always told me, vote Democrat even if it's a black man.
Wow.
And that was, you know, that was pounded into him as a kid.
Yeah, for that era, it is, that was a profound statement.
And my grandpa, who said that, actually was in the KKK for a while because they promised jobs in the Dust Bowl.
Oh,
and of course it didn't work out, and he came west. But you know, they did whatever they could, and thank God FDR was around.
And so you know, that's the kind of Democrat I am. I believe in. I'll go toe to toe and nose to nose with any teabagger on the planet. I believe in big government, because I believe if you've got a small government running a big country, you're going to have nothing but big screw-ups.
Yeah.
I mean, look, you know, let's be real, real clear. That is small government that's not just methyl,
Yeah. When was that's the last small, time they inspected that plant?
That is small government that leaked into the Elk River, okay?
Yes, it is. No oversight.
Yeah, right. I mean, just like the tar balls that washed up on the beaches of the Gulf of Mexico after the BP Horizon disaster, that was conservatism washing up on that beach.
Yes, it was. Small government.
Yeah. I mean, let's just make this a little bit of a manifesto here. I want a United States Department of Agriculture that has a goddamned army of meat inspectors.
Yeah.
I want... I want OSHA and MSHA inspectors. I want so many of them that they just live on site. that so that one, only one person has responsibility for one mine or one plant.
On a rotating basis, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it can't be bought off.
Right. I mean, so you see my point.
Yes.
Point well made.
You know, we have the national security problems that we have, as we've discussed before, because we farmed out, we privatized the intelligence business away from people who had actual sworn oaths to defend the Constitution of the United States. You know, neither Edward Snowden nor I want to be really clear. The Snowden stuff, some of that turns out to be quite beneficial in learning the larger picture of what is going on, of what's going on in the national security state. But let's understand something equally well. Neither he nor any of his superiors at Booz Allen Hamilton owed any allegiance whatsoever to the United States of America. They were, to use that term, that Sandra mentioned last night, stateless actors. Their only allegiance is to the quarterly profit and loss statement, preferably the profit side.
Or themselves, and whatever they can, you know, make out of it if they want to break away.
Hey, how about we take the soldiers and let them serve their country by testing the water in the air?
Well, unfortunately, we have a sad and sorry history of doing that to them in previous generations. The Tuskegee experiments come to mind.
Yeah.
Or was that a prison population? I forget. Let me bring somebody else into the conversation here. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, I was going to say Trinity test as well.
That's right. That's right.
Mm. Yeah, just go right on out there. Get in them trenches real close.
Right, yeah, it's not going to hurt.
No, you know, it's fine.
Well, you know, this is Devin, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been thinking about you all day long because I think you offered up the most trenchant observation of all last night when you said a censor is a person working for minimum wage with a long stick. And I've been thinking about that person with their stick and their minimum wage job wandering around that leaking tank at Freedom Industries all day long.
Yeah, and, you know, boots, you know, are optional, you know. Maybe some waiters. But,
well, hell, the stick may be optional, too. Just kind of bang on the steel and see if it doesn't fall apart, you're in good shape.
Yeah, or just... even if you saw something, you didn't see something.
I mean, why do these people not have, and I may appear to be very naive in this, we used to have what we call quality assurance people. I hear you. I understand. And, you know, it's just amazing how compliant and complicit these quality assurance people were, and you didn't get a whole lot of quality, and you sure as hell didn't get a whole lot of assurance. That's for damn sure. You may have gotten assurance, but it was bullshit. Sorry.
Yeah, well, it's like those ISO certificates for the Chinese manufacturers. It's just a piece of paper.
Right.
For the quality assurance inspection sheet. Oh, boy.
Just a piece of paper to be stamped on and pushed on further up the chain.
Yep.
To initiate or imitate compliance.
Yeah, but to them, it's just a paycheck, you know. Let's get some guys in there that want to, you know, really serve their country. I want to see these guys, these gung-ho bastards, go after the environmental assassins.
Well, that'd be great, but, you know...
An enemy worth going after.
That'd be great, but, I mean, these people of whom you speak, who are highly qualified, well-educated, and motivated, oftentimes are just basically lured away from public service and into something that's more lucrative and something that's not so much of a hassle. Is that because when everyone does his job, all of a sudden they're going to call him a whistleblower, and he's going to be in a world of shit, for trying to tell the truth.
Well, nobody's watching the watchers. You know, whether
where's the Edward Snowden that's, you know, that's an inspector.
Right. And that, you know, that goes back to my, you know, I want, I mean, very few people, few people know that there is, and I mentioned this on a Twitter, Facebook remark earlier today. It was last summer when Coal River Mountain Watch, the Ohio Valley Environmental Coalition, and a number of other organizations banded together to file a petition against the West Virginia Department of Environmental Protection, alleging that they were wholly and totally incompetent, and that their authority to administer the Clean Water Act in West Virginia should be pulled. Well, it turns out that turned out to be prophetic. For instance, I think there was some ungodly attrition number during Joe Manchin's administration as governor, and he just said, "Well, the hell with it. I'm not going to hire more inspectors to inspect mountaintop removal sites or sludge dams that hold back, you know, 9 billion gallons of toxic waste." You know, because Joe Manchin is a small government Democrat. Joe Manchin is about as much of a Democrat as I am an anarcho-syndicalist.
Yeah, right.
Well, he's...
What, you know, he's bought and paid for it.
A Republican in any other state, but, you know, what other choice do you have in this state? You know, the alternative is usually something that's, makes him look like an angel.
Well, I mean, yeah, look, I mean, consider who ran against him in the last election.
Oh, God.
A guy named John Racey. Now, this guy is straight up chase him with a butterfly net crazy. Okay? He owns properties in Morgantown, West Virginia, and Racey said to the world, while everybody was, you know, while a whole bunch of people were rolling tape and writing down words with pencils on paper and stuff like that, you know, not just muttering at the end of the table at Thanksgiving, he said that not being able to smoke inside his building in Morgantown, West Virginia, was the same as being put on a train and hauled off to Auschwitz.
Oh, boy. I remember that.
Now, this man owns the radio media conglomerate in West Virginia.
And newspapers as well.
Oh, yeah. He owns the Dominion Post, doesn't he, Devin?
Yeah. And when he lost against Byrd, the paper didn't cover it.
No.
There were no election results the next day.
Oh, my God. Yeah, because you're in a neck of the woods where you'd know that.
It was rather impressive. So.
Yeah, I mean, does the banner across the paper just does it just translate as TASS or Pravda or Izvestia?
No, these people, Bob, speak in unison nonsense like that. Who's that idiot named Hobby Kirchival?
Oh yes, the Hopster.
I mean, no more with a name like that. If I had it, I would have it changed, or at least that would not be my air name because. I mean, and I first heard him, and I said, you know, a Kirchival is a unit of is how much nonsense you can utter in like 5 minutes. And then if you want to apply other standards to it, like I used to say about that idiot here, O'Brien, just he's as much nonsense as you can utter in an hour. So how many O'Briens will equal a Kirchival or vice versa?
Mega Kirchivals.
Yeah. Really.
Kilo Kirchivals.
Yeah, exactly. Oh God, I mean, I don't know where they find these people.
Oh, he's been in Morgantown since we're not that far apart in age, and he's been there since I was there as a student.
Oh yeah, I guess he has, and you know, basically, just uttering a lot of nonsense and stuff like that, and nothing really is concrete or productive or in any way. What am I trying to say? Progressive or even compassionate. There's no compassion in the tones of these people.
No. And I have deliberately not listened into West Virginia Metro News, owned by John Racy, since this disaster began.
Well, you know, one thing about the situation, and maybe it's every cloud has a silver lining, I'm hoping that this situation can be so onerous and so dangerous that it will bring to people's attention the danger of non-regulation, the danger of having these idiots put up tanks right next to a river, and maybe it will make them do something about it, because when 300,000 people stay without water, and God only knows how long that's going to be, that's going to have to attract some attention and make people who have been against that all along, they're going to say, well, maybe those tree huggers weren't wrong after all.
You know what it's going to have to take? 300,000 dead.
Oh, Jesus, don't even say it, Greg.
I don't say that, but I'm just saying.
No, but I mean, but here, let me clarify something for you, Greg. That wouldn't do it.
I know, I know.
In 1972, thousands of people were displaced from their homes when their homes were destroyed. Hundreds of people were killed in something called the Buffalo Creek disaster in Logan County, West Virginia. That was a few million gallons of coal toxic waste roaring down a holler creek bed.
Wow.
Well, their response to it was to say, well, why are we building dams? Why are we building earthen dams that hold back millions of gallons of toxic waste? Why aren't we building earthen dams that hold back billions of gallons of toxic waste?
Jeez.
I don't know. Maybe you haven't heard me talk about it before, but there's a thing called the Brushy Fork impoundment outside Whitesville, West Virginia. If you look up Whitesville on Google Earth and just wander around, you'll see it. It is the largest dam in the Western Hemisphere. It makes it makes Hoover Dam a piker. Okay,
wow.
It holds back 9.8 billion gallons of toxic waste in an unlined impoundment that is sitting on top of old coal mines that are full of water and fit to go at any moment. On top of that, Alpha Natural Resources, formerly Massey Energy, routinely blasted next to the earthen dam. When somebody at Coal River Mountain Watch raised that as an issue, the West Virginia Department of Environmental Protection responded by saying, well, we found a thing on the Google says it's good to blast near earthen dams.
Oh, jeez.
It compacts them, right?
Right. Yeah. To the gang on the phone, I just found out that Richard is on, would like to jump into the conversation, but I need to clear a space for him. Anybody want to volunteer?
I'll drop off.
All right, Kevin. Thank you for that, and hopefully we will talk later next week.
All right, Bob. You have a good weekend, and stay as safe as you can out there.
Well, I will. I've got to be driving through Charleston tomorrow. I'm not looking forward to it.
Good night, Kevin.
Night, Kevin.
Good
night.
See you, Kevin.
Bye-bye.
Not sure which button Kevin is, so I'll wait for that to... Okay. And now we will bring Richard into the conversation. Wait, I screwed up. There's Richard.
He is?
Yes.
Is Richard here?
You are.
Hello, everybody.
He is.
Nice to be on with you. I have a tremendous topic, and I'm going to hold off till next week because it's a conversation. Let me just tell you what the topic is, and then let's let it go. It's lobbying, and I have a wonderful book that I can recommend to everybody. It's an old book from 1972, and it's called The Washington Payoff. It explains a hell of a lot about this, how our government works. I have been interested in lobbying for a long time and found it impossible to search for it meaningfully on the web, because when I search about lobbying, what I get back is just a barrage of ads for lobbyists.
Ads.
So, anyway, I'll talk about this next week. Okay.
Sounds good, Richard. Yeah, because I mean, it's kind of hard to break the topicality this evening, I'm afraid.
Yeah. Oh, I know. No. We're having a conversation after all. I mean, a group conversation. It's not appropriate.
Right. And I've got a lot of noise on your line for some reason or another.
Well, I'm patched through by way of.
Well, no. I don't think that's the issue because we've got other folks who've been patched through that way.
Hmm. Well.
Speak more directly into the phone, maybe.
No, this is some kind of an electrical hum.
Yeah, oh, really?
A little buzz.
That may be coming from this phone. Let's see if I can use another phone and kill that. Is this any better?
It seems to be.
Good. Okay.
Yeah, because I couldn't pot you up enough to really make you audible because the hum was so loud. It seems to be it seems to be definitely better.
Well, I jumped from a cordless phone to a corded phone.
That's probably it.
555.
And maybe, it could be that the, my neighbor may be running some kind of a device that's interfering with the cordless, because cordless is radio. So, anyway.
He's Ten Hat?
I'm sorry?
His Ten Hat is interfering?
I couldn't quite make out what you just said.
No, I'm just you're joking. He's got a Ten Hat on, or he's with the aliens or something.
No, it's nothing like that. It's just natural for various radio devices to, mess each other up.
Microwave oven.
A vibrator?
Stop that, Jim.
No, a vibrator won't do it, but a microwave could.
Why?
And, anybody near my house could be talking on, their cordless phone or whatever, These devices all
do you ever overhear the conversations when you're doing that?
No, I'm not worried about that. There are some people around the Bay Area who love to listen in on other people's cell phone calls and cordless phones. I mean, they're hobbyists who do this, but I'm not worried about neighbors in this regard.
Well, I do have information coming from the engineering quarter that yes, a vibrator could do it, could create the noise if the motor is arcing. The things you'll learn on this program.
Well,
Jiminy Christmas.
Depends on if it plugs in a wall.
Well, DC motors do arc. I mean, that's.
I just don't. I don't. chromium zircon encrusted.
Got it. And don't be sure to forget.
Listen,
about
how are you guys doing
money.
In West Virginia? What's going on?
Oh, it sucks here. I mean, I'm speaking ex cathedra because I'm not in one of the affected counties. We just don't have water here, because there's a boil. I mean, we've got water. There's a boil water advisory in Fayette County, because the water may be full of poo or something. But
not the same spill, right?
No, it's not a spill. It's just from it's the after effects of a bunch of busted mains. But it is a godforsaken mess in the affected counties. Richard, no restaurants open, no bars open, no tattoo parlors open, no schools open, no universities open, no daycares open, hospitals operating on critical supplies. They can't wash laundry at high. Washing laundry is a big damn deal at a hospital.
No surgery. Yes, no elective surgery.
No elective surgeries. And I don't want to think about what an emergency surgery would be under those circumstances.
I would think the emergency surgeries would be okay. I wouldn't worry about those. But, I did get hold of my cousin, and he happens to be in New York right now. But he said he's got no water at his house.
Well, he's got water. You just can't use it. Is he on a well, Richard? Or
he lives on a brick street in Charleston, and he's sort of around the corner from the Elk River.
Okay, well, no, he's got. That's the thing. He's got water, but and that's one of the central problems that we've been discussing about all this, is that the water. First of all. The water may have been toxic for a couple or three days before the event was even declared. We know that the state of West Virginia knew that the water was poison about 11 hours before Governor Earl Ray Tomblin declared that there was a problem. So people were drinking it, washing with it, cooking with it, bathing in it.
Non-toxic, right?
It's non-toxic, except for the fact that it can cause continuous vomiting.
Yeah.
Jesus. I think, it's time for us to take our country back. And we've got to rout out these rotten politicians that we have.
God, that would mean throwing the whole blessed lot out in West Virginia, with the single exception of maybe four or five.
You deserve it.
I just want to know how you're going to get by without the bars.
Into each life, some rain must fall, Jason.
That's the reason I keep at least 4 or 5 gallons of water around here, Bob.
And 10 gallons of liquor, Jim.
10 gallons of liquor, absolutely, absolutely. I mean, you know, what can I say?
I mean, it's bourbon and branch water, not just branch water, right?
Yeah, you got it. I mean, you know, like they used to say back in the '70s, these types of substances can get you through times of no morality a lot better than morality could get you through times of no liquor or no dope.
Well, there you go. I always fall back on my favorite prophet, peace be upon him, W.C. Fields, who once declared, it reminds me of the time we were in Afghanistan.
Oh, God.
We had lost our corkscrew. We were forced to live for 2 weeks on nothing but food and water. Well, in Charleston, you can't even have the water, nor the liquor. Corkscrews are no help.
You know,
there's no food either.
Yeah, I just wonder how these guys are functioning right now. I mean, it's night, and you know, I mean, how much water can they contain? I mean, they can't bathe, they can't do their dishes.
Well, one weatherman announced, Jim, that good news was on the way because it was going to rain, and that would dilute the poison.
Yeah, and you can run out into 35-degree rain and take a shower.
Yeah, get out there
butt
naked and just scrub up like Ziggy Pop and Crybaby. You know, just get in the old wash tub, put it outside, and yeah, oh dear God Almighty.
Hey, I'm going to ask for another volunteer to bow out of the phone group because I want to get one more caller in here.
I'll bug out, Bob.
Oh, okay, Dan.
Yes, sir.
Okay, well, you've been kind of quiet this evening. Don't let that become a habit.
It won't be a habit, Bob. Take good care.
All right, thanks.
Dan. Good night, all.
Good night.
Night, Dan.
Thank you.
Okay, waiting to see which line Dan was. Okay, there.
I like Dan. He's a nice guy.
I like Dan a lot. And I'm going to bring before I bring the next caller on, just a general reminder, here with the week ending, we are still somewhere in the neighborhood of $230 shy of finishing the week to the good. So 23 folks, $10 a piece, 46 folks at $5, and Kate hates to hear me do math on the fly, so I won't take it any further. But if you want to hit the PayPal button or send something in by traditional mail, the address is there in the same place as the button, and it is all much appreciated. Okay, let's see who we got. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Yes.
My name is Ken.
Hey, Ken. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm well. Welcome to the program.
Thanks. I enjoy your show. I listen every night, and I agree with just about everything you say. But every once in a while, you say it confuses me because you say you're a Democrat. I'm a lifelong Democrat, too. But don't you feel like the party has really just turned its back on working people and people like,
yes.
I just don't feel like they're there for us anymore.
But I reserve the right to define what a Democrat is. I don't think the DLC scum has that right. And I'm damned if I'm going to be run out of a party that my parents, my grandparents, and my great-grandparents built. Toward more practical ends, While I voted for any number of Mountain Party candidates in this state, and if I was in the same district to vote for Ed Rabel, I would run, not walk, to the polls to do that. there's no competition there. I mean, that, you know, that, that movement is going to have to grow to the point, you know, I'm not, I need to see independent third party types who are of like mind with me, who are running for county commissioner, who are running for mayor, or House of Delegates or something like that. And thus far, it has not happened, at least not here. You know, well, if I had a Bernie Sanders to vote for every election, yeah, I'd be as independent as Bernie Sanders is.
The other thing, Bob, is that our form of elections, the first past the post, winner take all, it doesn't allow for third parties.
Precisely.
I mean,
that's right.
You're either going to suck up votes from the Democrats, or you're going to suck up votes from the Republicans, and then whoever isn't running a third party that's more aligned with the other is going to win.
Well, Bob, I got to tell you something. I just came in, but I want to let you know that Douglas Amy, a few years ago, wrote some books, and there was a friend of mine out here in California, Steve Chesson, who started the Children's Caucus of the Democratic Party, had a movement going for people to start accepting proportional representation as a method of voting. It hasn't got, the movement hasn't gotten very far. But it seems as though what you're saying is that we need to do what the Republicans did when they started rebuilding their conservative movement. They wanted to get right-wingers in there, so where that, what they started doing, they started trying to take over school boards, and then they started working the grassroots that way with their stealth candidates. Now, I'm not saying the Democratic or the independents on the left side are going to be stealth candidates. I don't think they will. But what you're saying basically is we have to have a grassroots strategy, and those particular candidates that we want to support have to come from our grassroots community. The problem with the major parties is what they do is they come into a lot of these areas like ghettos, and they come into rural areas where there are poor people, and then they determine to say, hey, look, this is our candidate, this is our Democratic candidate or our whatever candidate, and you should accept what our candidate wants for you to do, rather than letting that candidate organically develop from within the community that wants the change. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yes, I do. And you know, Larry, I've been preaching for years that the time to make a difference is never in November. And I agree with Jason's analysis too, that and I say this with somewhat of a caveat because I believe so thoroughly in Ed Rabel's candidacy, but there was no room for Ed in the Democratic Party race here. I'd say he actually has a fighting chance, but where things like school board, county commission, mayor, things like that are concerned, that's where the difference has to come, and the candidates have to be prepped, and they have to be ready to run in the primaries. You know, party primaries are not elections. They are nominating conventions.
Right.
But here in California, things have changed. The primary, in many races, the primary really is the election.
Well, it is anywhere there's a significant political majority in one party or the other. It was that way. It was that way in a lot of southern states for years, and now it is in the other direction with Republicans. But it is a nominating process.
You know,
yeah, and the whole thing to get into that is you gotta join your local Democratic Party and just take it over.
Yeah.
You know, Jason and Bob and whoever was on the phone earlier. You know, people in California back in 1992, there was a movement to get rid of Willie Brown. And that started the movement for term limits. So we have statewide term limits in a situation, and what the voter said is we need to get rid of the candidate. So now you have competitive races in districts where, you know, there doesn't need to be competition. So the whole term limits idea was flawed from the very beginning. But what happens is when you have term limits, there ceases to be any kind of institutional memory in the government itself, and nothing ever seems to get done, and the bureaucracies and the staffs in the various places end up being the only ones that have the institutions.
Yeah, Yeah, well, when you got term limits, too. The institutional memory becomes the lobbyist, and that's a bad thing.
Yeah.
Can you comment, one of you?
Ken, you jump in on this. You started it.
Yeah, well, I agree with the local level thing and building from the bottom up, but what do we do in the meantime on a national level? Do we just keep putting these people in, like, you know, Obama, that just, you know, they promise you the moon, and then they get in and they turn around and do the opposite of everything they said?
I know, Ken, and the frustration is palpable, not just for you, but for many of us. But you have to look at it in the light that Jason just described it. It's first past the post. It's not a parliamentary system. I personally wish it was a parliamentary system, but it isn't.
If you want to get people elected that are progressives, and you need to join one of those outside institutions like the PCCC and Democracy for America and blah, 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 and go on down the list, those are where you can contribute to their super PACs. And unfortunately, since we have Citizens United, they can give the money to the candidates or indirectly.
You just said something. I have no idea what it means. What is CCC? Please define it.
PCCC. PCCC dot... is it com or org?
I'm guessing it's org. And I hate to
change committee.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. To answer your question.
Oh, wait, Larry. Wait. We got to get out of here.
Sorry, I've got to end the show.
Yeah, I've got to end. Please feel free to continue the conversation. Thanks everybody for your participation. I really appreciate it. Friday on the front porch is always invigorating and a joy to engage in. Remember, the Horn Malloy Skype chat group will continue on. If you want to send Sparky a contact request, Sparky Dunk on Skype, then after midnight it'll get really rousing, midnight Eastern. So thanks very much to all of you, and I look forward to more on Monday when we can continue the discussion. Maybe there'll be a little bit more news about the disaster in the Kanawha Valley. So with that, I will thank everybody. I'll thank those of you who keep this effort afloat with your kind contributions. Yeah, we are about $230, $220 away from ending the week to the good. All help is appreciated. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky and Texas Betsy in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thank you to John Fox in Australia, and thank you to Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks always go out to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ACHECT, ACHECT.org. There were Coal River Mountain Watch folks working, sampling the water from the Elk River even today. But always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. And here comes Rick Smith on the horn.